ladies and gentlemen, to the War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, coming to you live this Wednesday afternoon. Hope everybody's doing well. Of course, ask you to share our links on X, band.video, infowars.com. We got a lot to talk about today. Looks like war with Iran is right around the corner. Lots of moves being made in that direction. I'll show you some of that. And we got a lot of other news to talk about as well. Well, let's begin today as we do every day with our daily dispatch. All right, here it is, folks, your daily dispatch for Wednesday, the 14th of January, 2025. Lunar Power, NASA and the Department of Energy team up to build and deploy a nuclear reactor on the moon by 2030. Are you sure we can afford that with all of the Somalis that we have to babysit? Are you sure this is the right choice to make? I mean, we've got a couple options here. We can go to the stars. We can have nuclear reactors and bases on the moon. We can have flying cars and an advanced futuristic society. Or we can babysit the third world for another 100 years. I guess we're changing our tactics. I guess we spent the last 100 years deliberately weakening ourselves for the benefit of people who hate us. Maybe that wasn't a good idea, and maybe we should just achieve our dreams, regardless of how mad it makes everybody else. Meanwhile, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. appoints new vaccine skeptics to CDC advisory panel. HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. announced the appointment of two new members to a key federal vaccine advisory panel, one of whom has described herself as a, quote, anti-vaxxer. Kennedy announced he had selected two OBGYNs to join the Advisory Council on Immunization Practices for the Center of Disease Control and Prevention. The new members are Adam Urato, a OBGYN specializing in maternal fetal medicine, and Kimberly Biss, a OBGYN from St. Petersburg, Florida. And, yeah, good. We should probably have some people that aren't on the pay of the big pharmaceutical companies on the panel to determine whether or not the big pharmaceutical companies get to inject poison in your children. I think that's a good idea, and I'm glad that's happening. Meanwhile, Steve Witkoff announces phase two of Gaza peace plan. We're thinking in this half of the peace plan, Israel might actually stop bombing them. I'm kidding, of course. That's never going to happen. The second phase of President Donald Trump's peace plan in Gaza is about to begin. Today, on behalf of President Trump, we are announcing the launch of phase two of the president's 20-point plan to end the Gaza conflict, moving from ceasefire to demilitarization, technocratic governance, and reconstruction. Steve Witkoff, U.S. Special Envoy to the Middle East, announced on X Wednesday. In September, Israel and Hamas agreed to a ceasefire based on Trump's 20-point plan aimed at ending the two-year conflict. It began after Hamas attacked Israel on October 7th, 2023. And, of course, Israel continues to bomb them daily up till now. So we'd love to see that ceasefire be applied on both sides. Wouldn't that be something? Meanwhile, the ICE officer who shot Renee Good suffered internal bleeding following the incident, according to reports. The ICE agent who was hit by Renee Good's car in Minneapolis reportedly suffered internal bleeding after being hit by her vehicle. Jonathan Ross reportedly suffered that internal bleeding and was taken to the hospital after the incident with Good on January 7th, according to CBS News. And looks like, finally, immigration to U.S. turns negative in 2025, new Brookings Institution report finds. So for the first time in, like, decades, the net migration into the U.S. was actually negative, which is pretty incredible to see. More immigrants left the United States than those who entered the country in 2025, an occurrence that happened for the first time in at least half a century, according to a new report from economists. So that's a little bit of good news. A couple of good news stories there in the Daily Dispatch, brought to you, of course, by thealexjonesstore.com, where you could go today to get the incredible new trench knife. I don't know if you've been seeing the images of me during World War One. I am an ageless person. You might not know this. And yeah, it's a knife similar to this. Served me well. Stabbing whoever it was we were at war with in World War One. Life is fiery with its beauty. Incredible new trench knife on sale right now. TheAlexJonesStore.com. TheAlexJonesStore.com/Harrison if you want to let them know who sent you. Get it today at 40% off. TheAlexJonesStore.com. Limited time dagger. We'll be right back.
Yeah.
Bovine Colostrum Plus, a really incredible new product that's flying off the shelves. What if one simple scoop a day could strengthen your body's natural defenses at every single stage of life? This is Bovine Colostrum Plus, nature's very first superfood, now in its purest, most potent form. For teens and kids, Colostrum Plus delivers 4,000 milligrams of immune-boosting IgG antibodies and 20 grams of premium protein to power growth, crush colds before they start, and keep young athletes recovering faster and staying in the game. In your 20s and 30s, it rebuilds your gut barrier, sharpens focus, and helps you bounce back from tough workouts and late nights like you're still 21. Hitting 40, 50, and beyond? Well, Bovine Colostrum Plus fights back against age-related immune decline, supports healthy inflammation levels, and keeps your joints, skin, and energy feeling years younger. One scoop, 500 milligrams of soothing marshmallow root for your gut, 500 milligrams of lactoferrin, nature's ultimate defender, and zero junk. Get it today at thealexjonesstore.com.
You're watching The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now on X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We got a lot of news to talk about today. And it does look like war with Iran is right around the corner. And in a way, they're almost not even trying that hard to justify it. And this was a joke I kept making last time when I was like, at least they used to false flag us. Like, at least they had the respect for the American people. They respected us enough to at least fly a couple planes into buildings before they sent us to war, give us a reason. They don't even respect us enough to give us a reason now. It's just war with Iran. Like, okay, why? Well, they're killing protesters. Are they really, though? Well, maybe. I mean, the protesters are armed themselves, and there's lots of videos of them actually committing the violence. But it's like they aren't even coming up with a good reason now. It's essentially just they've lied enough, and we just keep calling out their lies. So at this point, they're just like, yeah, all right, we're just doing this for Israel. Okay, Israel wants us to attack Iran, so that's why we're doing it. And shut up if you don't like it, which is frankly insulting. Extremely insulting. And of course, we're, you know, happy to do this. The American government is thrilled at the idea that we get to start yet another quagmire. And it's amazing that you don't even have to, like, look into the past for an example of why this is a bad idea. It's literally happening in Syria as we speak. There are, you know, gangs going around, rounding up Christians, killing them, abusing other ethnic minorities. I mean, it's what's going to happen. I mean, it's not even speculation. Like, what could possibly be the outcome of war with Iran? Is there anybody that can even lay out a suggestion that it would be a positive thing? Like, nobody thinks it would be positive. Absolutely nobody. The Israelis, we played the video yesterday, are just going, yeah, as soon as the Iran regime falls, we'll bomb the entire country, just like we did with Syria. Okay? So, like, they know it's not going to be good. I don't know what the Iranian people think is going to come next. America doesn't even have a plan, as far as I can tell. Again, at least when we went into Iraq, it was like, we're going to bring them democracy. They're going to greet us as liberators. You know, we got 9/11 to remember that. We got to get revenge for that, even though these people didn't do it to us. At least there was something there. It was all lies. It was all nonsense, but like, at least shows a little bit of respect, right? It's just crazy. It really is. It really is legitimately insane that we're even getting to this point. And it really shows what a fraud the entire system of our democracy or our republic really is. Because absolutely nobody outside of Donald Trump, I guess, and the Israeli handlers want this at all. But we're just going to do it anyway, I guess. That's not exactly a new phenomenon. I mean, the vast majority of the American public didn't want to get into World War I or World War II. Of course, Vietnam was a giant disaster. We should have never gotten in the first place. So something that you kind of got to understand as you look back in history, war is almost always done for the benefit of the elite and against the wishes of the people in the country. Now, a lot of times the propaganda is such that eventually people get on board or they just accept, okay, we are at war now. I guess I have to take my team's side and fight for America because if we're in war, we at least want to win. But people never want to go to war. It's just, it's the people at the top just manufacture these situations and then drive us into war. And at this point, they don't even try to convince us that it's for the will of the people. They're just doing it sort of regardless of what we think or what the outcome will be. Unbelievable. Unbelievable we've gotten to this point. I got a bunch of videos about this. Let's go to clip 8 here. This is one of the warning signs that we're seeing showing that we are getting closer and closer to true confrontation with the Iranian regime. Let's watch.
Got some breaking news. You see this map on your screen. That is where the United States has military bases throughout the Middle East. Mm-hmm. Now, we can confirm that the U.S. is withdrawing some personnel from major bases across the Middle East due to heightened regional tensions. And you look at some of this in Qatar, that's the Al Udeid Air Base. You got about 8 to 10,000 U.S. service members. That's one of the larger bases. You got another army base in Kuwait that's been operating for some time now, several years, if not decades. So how much of withdrawal, we do not know.
And why?
And why is the ultimate question
yeah.
as to whether or not we are in for some sort of military action.
Yeah, why? Why would we be withdrawing personnel from military bases around Iran? Gee, I wonder. Let's go to clip number 9. What could it be? Go ahead and roll it as B-roll. Why would we want to remove our soldiers from being near Iran? I wonder what could possibly be the reason. So they don't all get killed by Iranian missiles, you idiots. Yeah, because we're starting a war with Iran and they're going to kill like thousands of Americans. And then we're going to be in full-fledged war with Iran. And Russia is not going to take it lying down. And China is not going to take it lying down. And we're going to start World War III because our other option is politely asking Israel to stop wholesale killing children. These are our options. We can either start World War III, go to war with Iran at behest of Israel, have thousands, if not tens of thousands of American servicemen killed for this, as we plunge into possibly nuclear conflict with Russia and China, all so that Israel can continue to kill people without reservation, or we can just stop Israel killing people and try to regain peace. These are our options. We're choosing World War III. Our other option is simply ask Israel, stop killing the children. Stop murdering the Gazans. Stop conquering their land. Stop taking out the West Bank. Stop murdering the Syrians. Stop taking the land around there. Stop trying to, you know, bomb Hezbollah by slaughtering Lebanese civilians. Like, they could just stop doing any of that and we could get back to peace. Or we can double down and we can commit suicide for the sake of this cancerous little node of evil on the Mediterranean that we call Israel. Sick of this. I honestly... We have to stop. Like, and we're running out of time. If we go to war with Iran, should we all meet in D.C.? Can we all make a plan, you guys? Can we all meet in D.C. if Trump goes to war with Iran? We already tested this one time, right? We already went through the ridiculous charade of bombing the Fordow plant. When they'd already moved the stuff or it was a fake raid, whatever the hell happened back then. It obviously didn't work, right? Are we just going to do this every 6 months? Every 6 months, we're going to have a big conflict with Iran where he bombs some of their sites and assassinate some of their people and cause some riots there. Like, what are we doing? What are we doing? Why are we doing it? The answer of why we're doing it, the only possible answer you could give with any reasonableness whatsoever, it's for Israel. It's for the sake of Israel. Not that Israel is suffering under an existential threat and we have to rescue them, which wouldn't even be worth it in the first place. They're awful. They're nothing but evil. We really have to be done with them. Like, it's one thing when they're just, you know, again, just slaughtering children and whatever, you know, putting explosives in toys to drop so children get them and they blow them up. Like, okay, fine. They have fun murdering people because they're sick in the mind. That's one thing. When they want us to do their dirty work for them, when they want us to get in the fight for them, we have to not have kid gloves on. We have to take off the gloves. We have to be honest about what this is because there is absolutely no argument for going to war with Iran that has anything other to do, anything other than it's for Israel. And again, not for Israel's survival, not for their existence, for their domination, for their ability to act with impunity, for their ability to commit war crimes and genocide innocent people without suffering the consequences. That's why we want to go to war with Iran. That's why we are probably going to go to war with Iran, so that Israel can continue to slaughter people with impunity. No other reason. There's no other argument. If this was about the people of Iran, where is that same concern for the people of Palestine? It's not about the people of Iran. Anybody telling you it's for the people of Iran, is lying to you, just straight out. Because if they actually had a humanitarian bone in their body, if they want to make the argument that it's for the sake of the people living there, then where have you been while Israel has systematically eliminated, the latest count, 680,000 Palestinians? That's the latest numbers that have been published. So I think we should all meet in D.C. So I think if we actually strike Iran in any meaningful way, I think it's sort of the final blow to the illusion of the American Republic. This is not for us. It's not for our benefit. It's not what we want. It's not what we voted for. It's just obviously a giant scam by foreigners who hate us. So maybe that needs to be the end of this whole little experiment. I honestly completely sick of it, and completely sick of the arrogance of the Israelis as they basically claim that they're going to send us to do their dirty work. Let's go to clip number. I'm sorry, that's not the one I wanted to go to. Let's go to. We have a bunch of videos to go to. Gee, where should we go now? Let's go to clip 22 here. This is Amir Avivi, retired IBF brigadier general, basically saying that America is going to go start the fight with Iran. Why? What does this benefit us? It doesn't. This is just Israel announcing that they are using their pit bull America to attack for them. U.S. military intervention in Iran may begin within 24 hours, European officials say. An unnamed Israeli official also said it appeared Trump had decided to intervene, though the scope and timing remain unclear. Well, Godspeed to Iran then. Iran, do it now. Do it now. Seize the initiative, Iran. Blow up Israel and rescue all of us. Let's go to clip 22 now.
And today I can say something we couldn't have said a month ago. This regime is going down. There will be no Iranian regime. And this is going to change entirely the future
of
Israel.
How it happened? Can you describe us? It will be an American attack. It will be an Israeli-American attack.
So I think it's going to be an American-led attack with the assistance of Israel. Iranians, even before the demonstration started.
You know what that means, right? That means it will be an American attack. The Israeli assistance will be them directing us where to attack. The Israeli assistance will be, while they sit in their bomb shelters in Tel Aviv and direct Americans where to attack, where to die. So let's just be clear. They'll assist us just like they assist us in Iraq. Not a single soldier, right? They'll assist us like they did in Afghanistan. Not a single IDF soldier. The French helped us. The Germans helped us. The UK soldiers were sent to help us in Iraq and Afghanistan. And not a single IDF soldier was ever deployed to help us in any of those things. I'm sure it'll be different this time, right? Their assistance will be very valuable. You people can't even get rid of Hamas. The IDF is worthless, basically. Complete cowards. Can't do anything. Fail basically in everything they try, despite the fact that they kill hundreds of thousands of women and children. That's not exactly the CV of a impressive or powerful army, right? It's just a bunch of murderers. And anytime they get any pushback, anytime there's any sort of resistance, they fold like a house of cards, and then they bring in the airstrikes. It's all they know how to do. So they can't help us even if they wanted to, but they don't want to. They want to send us to die for them. So can we stop treating them nicely now? Can we stop treating them like you know, they're an ally, or that we have to like softly talk about them. They're trying to get us into World War III. And frankly, they're threatening us if we don't. I'll show you that on the other side. But let's go back to first this video of this guy. Oh, I think it will be an American-led thing with Israeli assistance. Okay. Okay. Let's watch.
So I think it's going to be an American-led attack with the assistance of Israel. Iranians, even before the demonstrations, they started rearming again. They wanted revenge. They want to attack us. They want to shoot massive amounts of ballistic missiles on us. And Israel prepared for a preemptive attack. But as Israel was preparing for a preemptive attack that might have happened even today, the demonstration started, and a clear message for President Trump: we are not going to let you shoot these demonstrators. We are going to defend them. And indeed, I think that we'll see in the very near future a massive American attack with the help of Israel and with the demonstrators. I think this regime stands no chance, and they will fall. And I can tell you, as I said, the bigger the win will be, the greater the golden age of Israel and the Jewish people will be.
Don't you love how he doesn't even try to, like, suggest anything for America? It's like, yeah, America will lead the attack because Israel's under threat, and this will be a golden age for Israel, and Israel wants to take out Iran, and America will do it for us, for the golden age of Israel. He's wrong. He's just absolutely wrong. I mean, obviously, the demonstrations in Iran were a Mossad operation slash American operation. They captured all these Starlink modes, like thousands of Starlink nodules that were trying to be smuggled in by Israel so they can communicate. As soon as the Starlink system went down in Iran, basically the demonstrations fizzled out because they're all being directed from outside of Iran because it's a color revolution. Same thing they, you know, did in Ukraine. Same exact tactics, actually. There was a video we had in the folder yesterday. I'm not sure we have it here, but it's an Iranian doctor showing some of the bodies of some of the protesters who have been killed, explaining that they were shot in the crowns of their heads by snipers who were shooting directly down on them. And the area where these people were killed, it was not, you know, Iranian regime forces that were in the buildings above them. It was construction sites where anybody could make their way up to the top floor and be shooting down on the Iranian protesters. That's exactly what happened in Maidan. That's exactly what happened to overthrow the president of Ukraine and install the Zelensky government in order to start a war with Russia. You remember that? First, they start the protests using the Open Society Foundation. I'm sure whatever the Mossad version of that is working in Iran. You get people out on the street, you get people protesting, and then you have snipers from your side shoot the protesters to blame it on the regime to get international outrage and also encourage, you know, more violence from the protesters on the ground. It's exactly what happened in Maidan. Y'all remember that? That was the big event that set off the revolution in Ukraine that ousted the Russia-friendly government. And it was snipers in Maidan, and a later investigation showed that those snipers were, in fact, sniping from buildings that were controlled by the protesters. They were not state snipers, even though that's what the story was told, and so it justified the overthrow. Yeah, the bullet entered neither stayed or entered or exited lower in the body based on the entry angles and the point of impacts in these cases. It says it clearly shows the shooter were at a very high altitude with complete dominance over the main streets. And again, it goes on to explain that this was, yeah, these individuals used half-finished buildings or construction sites. And this is actually something that the Iranian regime summoned all of the ambassadors from Europe and America and showed them videos of the protesters that were armed and shooting at the regime forces. So these aren't peaceful protesters. These are Mossad agents arming people inside Iran and starting the violence in the first place. So it's the same thing we've seen in Ukraine over and over. Again, it's not for us. It's not for the sake of America. It's for the sake of Israel. And, essentially they're threatening us if we don't go along with this. Go to clip 32 here. Jewish man has a warning to Americans. Let's watch.
Issued a stark warning to American Jews. I want to make a warning to somebody else, and that's American Gentiles. The minute your country is taken over by anti-Semitism, the minute you start to be a country that's not blessing Israel but cursing Israel, you have begun the process of shrinking away from your empire. That has happened. I don't think that that's theological. That's biological. That's the way the world operates. Every empire that turned on the Jewish people shrank back to its smallness. If it's the Germans and it's the Austrians, if it's the Dutch and the Spanish, and it's certainly a much more recent history, if it's the British who had a giant empire, gigantic, ginormous empire. But when they turned on the Jews, within just a few years, they became the little island that they are today.
Okay? I always wanted to do a PhD thesis tracking throughout history the meccas of Jewish diaspora and then the precipitous downfall immediately following them turning against the Jews.
The Jews are a channel for blessing in your nation.
You would not be allowed to do that. You would not be allowed to do that research, I hate to say.
We have a place
so that's a lie. Everything you just said is just an abject lie, but it's a threat. You understand? He's framing it as if, and this is what they do. He's framing it as if it's like, if you turn against the Jews, God will strike you down. No. He's saying, if you turn against the Jews will destroy you, is what he's saying. I mean, God didn't destroy the Nazis. American and English and French people did. Russian people did. Because the Jewish diaspora in those countries lobbied the government to go to war to protect Jewish people in Germany. That's not God, right? But even so, I mean, if you actually start doing that research, you probably wouldn't find what you think you'd find. Do you know what year Jews were kicked out of Spain? It happens to be the exact year that the Spanish Golden Age began, 1492. It's one of these things. It's like, well, that's kind of weird, isn't it? I don't know. God must have been confused on that one. Spain ousts the Jews in 1492, and that year begins the Spanish Golden Age, where they became the richest and most powerful empire the world had ever seen for hundreds of years. Wealth that they're still living on to this day. Pretty sure was it the Victorian or the Elizabethan Age? Yeah. King Ferdinand issued the Alhambra Decree on March 31st. 1492. Now search, when did the Spanish Golden Age begin? It's 1492. Yeah, so it's a threat. I mean, you know, the English Empire was an extremely powerful and cohesive empire until World War II. It was after World War II when Britain sacrificed its empire on the altar of Israel that it started to decline. And one of the last acts as empire that it did was to hand over their colonial holdings in the Middle East after granting them through the Balfour Declaration to then have their soldiers attacked by Jewish terrorists and forced to leave the area, a gift, an act of charity from the people of Britain to the Jews on the eve of the total collapse of their entire empire. They are now being swamped. Their country is basically collapsing and being destroyed. And the only thing that the government seems willing or capable of doing at this point is making more laws against anti-Semitism. Has the blessing of the Jews been a good thing for Western Europe over the last 50 years? I don't know. I think most of these countries are on the precipice of total and complete collapse. If they haven't already gone over the precipice, we just haven't seen the signals yet. France has just been released today. More deaths than births last year. How's that going for you? These people, man.
We're gonna make it, men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at the AlexJonesStore.com.
Hello, friends. Welcome to my home. We have all kinds of supplements.
Sometimes we have BOGO Supps.
We're always coming out with new products, and this is one of my favorites. You can shop for all of our supplements and apparel right here on the phone app.
They looked at sleep deprivation with creatine supplementation. And so they randomized people to either drink a placebo drink or drink 20 grams of creatine through the night. And they kept them awake all night and they had them do brain puzzle quizzes. And when the subjects were getting the 20 grams of creatine, they did way better on the brain puzzles, but they also complained about being tired a lot less. And so the conclusion is creatine is somehow acutely preventing your brain from suffering during sleep deprivation. And the rationale there is, you know, mitochondria are the powerhouse of the cell, or the power plant that's producing the energy. Creatine is like the power grid, and it distributes that energy throughout the cell. And so if the purpose of sleep is to restore the energy that you used up, but then you intervene by putting creatine in there, now you can keep that energy going and you can go more hours before you need to get rest and restore that energy because you've increased your capacity to distribute it.
That makes sense. Used to be people only thought of creatine as being a muscle thing. To help you recover. But then over the last year or two, I started hearing talking about cognitive function.
There is some literature on traumatic brain injury where 20 grams of creatine for 6 months doubles the rate of healing.
Whoa. That's incredible.
But it's, yeah, the just creatine, I called it more than a performance enhancer because there's, if you just look at where it's distributed in the body, almost every cell and every tissue has the creatine system. And if you look at the literature, they'll say, well, it's more important in certain cells. Like it's really important in your muscles because your muscles have this very polarized, sometimes they're at rest, sometimes their energy demand is going through the roof. And it's really important in, like long cells. So for example, your retina is part of your central nervous system. It's this really long cell that's coming from the brain into the eye, and creatine helps move energy back and forth. But if you just look at where, instead of where is it most important, you just like, where is it? It's like almost every cell in your body has creatine, and it's helping distribute the energy that the mitochondria make throughout your whole body, and that includes pumping stomach acid. It includes sperm swimming up the vaginal canal. And so if you just look at where it is, you would think that creatine would help a lot more than muscles. And I think creatine is really important because it's not in the mitochondria so much as it carries forth the mitochondrial energy of the rest of the cell. But that also feeds back in the repair functions for the mitochondria. And so I think creatine, optimizing your creatine status is super important. And I think that everyone who's not eating 1 or 2 pounds of meat per day should probably be taking creatine.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back, folks. This is War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. You know, the best thing about working at InfoWars is nobody tells me what to say. The worst thing about InfoWars is nobody tells me what to say. Well, it would be nice to have scripts written. I mean, it'd certainly be easier. But, you know, I recognize I have an obligation, a responsibility to deliver the news and not, you know, just use this position I've been given just to, you know, pursue my own interests or talk about my own thoughts, but, you know, use it responsibly and for what our audience demands, which is, you know, high quality news reporting and informed opinions about what's going on. But I admit I'm a little preoccupied. I saw a video today that I just can't stop thinking about, and I think I have to address it before we move on. It's Shabos Kestenbaum, something like that. Shabos Kestenbaum, our good friend Shabos. Clip number 10 here. Apparently J-Post, the Jewish Jerusalem Post, is having a conference, and Shabos Kestenbaum was there. If you don't know who Shabos is, name is really Shabos. He's a Democrat that gave a speech at the RNC for some reason. because I think he stood up against protesters on campus or something. I'm not really sure where he came from or why anybody listens to him, but he is unintentionally hilarious. Let's go to old Shabos here, saying what he thinks the solution to anti-Semitism should be. Let's watch.
Yet for whatever reason, when it comes to anti-Semitism, when someone commits an anti-Semitic act, we don't send them to jail. Instead, we get the ADL to say, let's bring them to a Holocaust museum, which A, gives them pretty bad ideas, and B, doesn't solve anything about the fundamental issue that they violated the law. So the way we solve anti-Semitism is pretty goddamn simple, and I'm really beside myself that we don't push for this with all the major Jewish organizations. When someone commits a crime, stop sending them on El Al flights. That will make them more anti-Semitic, I guarantee it. Send their ass to jail. It's not complicated.
The Holocaust never happened. What else should I say? Jews killed Jesus. Okay. What else? What else can I say? You going to send me to jail, Shabbos? Should I go to jail now? What else? What else should I say, you disgusting rat? Should I say something else that's anti-Semitic for you? See, I don't want to be anti-Semitic, but when you tell me it's illegal, I kind of have to now. I kind of have to be anti-Semitic now because you're telling me it's illegal that I can't. I'm sorry. This is America, sir. This is America. Okay. So we get to say whatever we want. That's it. That's the end of the conversation. Frankly, I think you should be in jail. Maybe you should be sent to a camp. Maybe we could have a nice camp for you set up where you can go and enjoy the rest of your life. Because which is more dangerous? Which is more offensive? Which should be illegal in America? Saying something anti-Semitic or advocating for the abolition of the First Amendment? Which is more dangerous to the fabric of our society, do you think? Which is more offensive and damaging to the fundamental character of our nation? Believing something that Shabbos Kestenbaum doesn't want you to say, or Shabbos Kestenbaum advocating to throw people in prison for not liking him? I mean, if we're going to get rid of the First Amendment, I'd like to see people like Shabbos thrown in jail. Is that anti-Semitic of me to say? You understand, we cannot let ideas like this be treated as if they're reasonable or normal or good. Shabbos should be sent to a camp. Shabbos Kestenbaum, we have to protect the American society from Shabbos Kestenbaum and these pernicious ideas of censorship on the basis of religion. It's completely antithetical to everything we believe as Americans. And I think we have an obligation now to be anti-Semitic, because they're trying to make it illegal. Like, you understand, the things I just said would actually send me to jail for 5 years in Australia under this new hate crime bill. If I was in the UK, I would have police dragging me out of my home and sending me to prison for what I just said 1 minute ago. Do you understand the world that they're trying to create, that they have already created in Australia in Western Europe, and that they're trying to bring here, that Shabbos Kestenbaum and his ilk are trying to institute here in America? They want to make it illegal to question them, illegal to insult them, illegal to question their religion or their faith or their dumb little hat or their ridiculous, genocidal, cancerous little country in the Middle East. And, you know, this is part of the playbook. You have to understand that this is a cycle that people fall into that I'm aware of and resist and am now indulging in a, you know, overabundant way to make a point. And you see it a lot. David Irving might be one of the best examples. David Irving, famous historian, worked only on first-hand primary sources. And so he wrote a book about Hitler, and he didn't have any mention of the Holocaust. or gas chambers or anything like that. And so people start calling him anti-Semitic. And you can actually watch, because a bunch of his speeches are on YouTube or BitChute or Odyssey. And if you watch him in chronological order, you can actually see he starts off with like, hey, look, I'm not trying to deny anything. I'm going off the primary sources. I didn't see any information about that. I'm not going to include it. But like, I definitely don't hate Jewish people. I'm definitely not trying to hurt him. And then like progressively it gets to the point where it's just like, our enemies are once again trying to silence me and the Jews will not stop me doing this. And it's part of it, right? Because like you start off just like, I'm not sure we should go to war for Israel. And then you're hit with like, oh, so you hate Jewish people? And you're like, no, not really. And then it's like, that guy hates Jewish people. You shouldn't let him, you know, be a part of your program. And it's like, what the hell? Now I'm losing jobs? Because so now the Jews are stopping me from doing my job. And so now you are my enemy. And so you like fall into being an anti-Semite because of how you're treated by merely questioning George Soros or Israel or whatever else. So in a way, I think, you know, our friend Shabbos here is like trying to incite that reaction. But at the same time, the seriousness of the threat here has to be confronted, and it has to be shown to be as ridiculous as it is. I don't know. What else can I say that's anti-Semitic? Jews have big noses. You going to send me to jail? Oh, do I need to go to jail now, Shabbos? Oh, you going to come arrest me? Do you know why quarters have ridges? Do you know why quarters have ridges, folks? Yeah, like this is the thing. I have to resist my, when somebody is like, it should be illegal to be anti-Semitic, my first instinct is to be like, really? Let me start reading this book from my friend Adolf. Like, that's the American response. When you tell me I can't do something, I have to do it. When a Muslim tells me I can't draw Muhammad, I didn't even want to draw Muhammad. Now I have to, because you're telling me you're going to kill me if you don't. If you tell me you're going to send me to jail for being anti-Semitic, it is now my obligation to be anti-Semitic. I'm sorry. That's just what it has to be. Now, the irony is that Jews have so much control in America that if they wanted to have Americans support Israel, supporting the American diaspora, to stop people from shaving off precious metal in the edges for profit, who would do such a thing? Oh, hello, Shabbos. I mean, I'm sorry. We have to do this now. And if the Israeli people or the Jewish diaspora wanted Americans on their side, guess what? We are still to a large degree. Jews never had a problem in America. They were never really discriminated against to any degree. There was, and put like, well, some country clubs kept out Jews. It's like, okay. And like right now there is, you know, one group, the Return to the Land group, who's trying to have an all white community in Arkansas or wherever they're building their community. And there's Jewish groups are infuriated and are suing to shut it down or trying desperately to stop it from happening. Do you know there are like 54 Jewish-only communities around the country? Some have seceded from their cities so that they're autonomous Jewish-only metropolitan areas in places like New York. But when a white group wants to do it, it gets shut down. Like, Jews have never had a problem in America. It's never been an issue. There's never been anti-Semitism to any sizable degree whatsoever. There's certainly never been any institutional anti-Semitism whatsoever at all. And at this point, it's the exact opposite. Jews have way more privileges than white people when it comes to going to, you know, elite colleges or the Ivy League or getting jobs. I mean, it's funny, Shabbos Kestenbaum has a video from a couple weeks ago where he's like, I don't get why people say it's hard to get a job. People keep offering me 100,000 jobs and I don't even have a degree. It's like, oh, okay. Is that how you think the world is for everyone? Or are you perhaps a part of an elite that gets certain privileges that aren't offered to the rest of us? I wonder. And so if they wanted to actually come together on this, if they wanted America to continue to love the Jews as we have for our entire existence, maybe they could help out America a little bit. Maybe all the incredible wealth and influence in Jewish hands these days could do something other than deconstruct our country and call for the abolishment of our fundamental beliefs and our Bill of Rights. If it was instead used to, like, all this influence, all the, you know, CBS News gets purchased, TikTok gets purchased. If they were instead censoring the leftists, censoring the people that hate America, helping America, encouraging the, you know, immigration system, it wouldn't be an issue. They're choosing not to do that. They're choosing instead to push it as hard as they can and then try to make it illegal to stop them. And again, obviously, this is part of the plan. So we have to be aware of it while also combating it. And it's not the easiest thing to do, but I do think that it's now our obligation, as we are one of the only places in the world where I'm not going to get a visit from the police for saying the things that I've said on this segment, on air, on the radio. Again, are you going to allow them to do this? Are you going to allow anti-American interests to destroy your First Amendment? Are you going to be a little bit mean? I'm going to be a little bit mean. I'm going to be a little bit bigoted. I'm going to be just a little bit offensive to certain groups of people. And in exchange, I'm going to get to think my own thoughts. I'm going to get to have a country. I'm going to get to uphold the First Amendment. And I'm going to get to continue to express myself freely without having to worry about a knock on my door or a letter from the government asking me to turn myself in. That's coming, folks. That happens in Australia. That happens in the UK. Maybe we should open up the phone lines. Hey, if you're an American and you want to call in and say something anti-Semitic because you can, because it's your right as an American, maybe we'll open up the phone lines and let everybody call in and sound off. Maybe we'll open up the phone lines for people from overseas, where if they were to say things in public there, they would literally be arrested. So, said it a million times, the First Amendment is the thing that allows Jews to practice their religion in this country, and it's the thing that allows us to criticize the Jews, the Jewish people, their religion, their state. Shavos Kestenbaum and his Weasley appearance. It's a beautiful and wonderful thing, the First Amendment, and these people are trying to destroy it. So we have to stop them. And we have to do the things they don't want us to do. Sorry, Shabbos. Sorry, rat. Not going to happen here. It's not going to happen in America because people like me still exist who aren't going to fall for the trap of actually starting to hate all the Jews because disgusting little faggots like this present themselves as the spokesperson of Jews. I'm actually lucky that I actually have Jewish people in my life that I know and love, because it'd be very easy for me to think they were all like old Shabbos over here. Luckily, I know better, so I don't fall for the trap. A lot of people do. But you have to understand, and I explained this a little bit yesterday on the show with Ian Wendt, and it's so fundamental, it's so obvious, it's the Gandhi quote, it's the MLK quote, it's you can't defeat hate with hate, hate only begets hate. Because right now, we're in this long-term, multi-generational cycle where the Nazis abuse the Jews, and then the Jews have Israel, and they start abusing the Palestinians, and anybody who tries to stand up against it, they say, well, do you remember the Nazis, though? But no, we get to do this because of how the Nazis treated us. So now the Israelis are acting like the Nazis, and now a bunch of people on the anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, anti-Semite side are now adopting their, you know, dog-eat-dog, all-or-nothing, you're-with-us-or-you're-against-us mindset. Like I've always talked about, people who are anti-Zionist going, you like Charlie Kirk, but he was a Zionist. That's because they're in this mindset of like, if you're a Zionist, you therefore are killing babies and you therefore deserve to die and are my enemy. No, Charlie Kirk was me. He just liked Israel. He was my age. He was my demographic. He was a white Christian Protestant from America, married with kids. He was me. We just disagreed on Israel. But for these people, it's an extremism. And it's an extremism born from the extremism of the Israelis, which is born from the extremism of the Nazis. Where do you think this ends? It doesn't end. The only way it ends is for loving Christian people to impose order on all of it. That's where this ends. Not between the feedback loop of Muslim extremism feeding Jewish extremism, feeding Muslim extremism, feeding Jewish extremism, and white Christian people being forced to choose a side. It ends when white Christian people say enough of all of this. We're not with the Nazis. We're not with the Jews. We're with the American Christians who can use our incredible power and prestige on the world stage to put our foot down and put a stop to the relentless killing of innocent people on both sides. It would be hard to make that argument if Shabbos Kestenbaum gets his way and suddenly saying that Israel is committing genocide will send me to jail, would be illegal. Come arrest me, Shabbos, you genocidal idiot, you Jewish moron. Dave Portnoy and Shabbos and frickin' Rabbi Buttplug can all get together at a camp surrounded by barbed wire somewhere in Montana and spend the rest of their lives talking about how important and wonderful they are. We don't need them here. We don't want them here. They are a danger to our system. So maybe we'll open up the phone lines. Maybe you people can tell me what you think about old Shabbos there. Again, no offense. No offense, everybody. Sorry if this was a little bit offensive. But they're trying to destroy the First Amendment. They're trying to get us into war with Iran. The time for kid gloves and half measures and giving these people the time of day is over. It's dangerous. It's dangerous what they're doing, and they need to be stood up against. And if they're doing it on the basis of their Judaism, if they're trying to destroy our First Amendment on the basis of anti-Semitism, then that's the vector by which we need to confront it. Sorry, not my fault. Not my fault they're Jews. I'd be against them no matter what. They happen to be Jews this case. Okay. I'd be against it if it was Catholics. I'd be against it if it was Muslims. I am against it if it's all those people. But it's not. It's Jews. So that's what I'm against. Sorry. That's just how it works. And again, you see, I mean, the thing is, like, what is Australia supposed to do about it right now? What is the UK supposed to do about it right now? They already have the free speech restrictions that mean they cannot effectively argue against greater free speech restrictions. They cannot come together to demand that white people have a say because it's already been made illegal to speak for white people as a whole, to advocate for our interest, or to advocate against the interest of the Jewish people. It's already effectively illegal in those places. So how are they going to argue against the greater restrictions to their speech, against the greater carve-outs to what they're allowed to think or say or express or read or find out? They can't. So it's going through. So it'll get passed through, and the restrictions will only be more restrictive, only more Orwellian, only more dangerous. So we're not going to enter into that feedback loop. We're not going to step our foot in that riptide and get dragged away. Because once you do, it's over. Okay? Once you allow them to start making anything like that illegal, it's all illegal. It all goes away. So we're stopping it right now by re-insisting we have the right and now, unfortunately, the obligation to be anti-Semitic. Sorry. I really am. I really wish Shabbos and those like him wouldn't be such arrogant, unhelpful, tyrannical Jews. It's just, you know, I wish.
On Tuesday in the House of Representatives, we intend to have that legislation pass the House before question time, which will occur at the normal time at 2 o'clock, and then will be considered by the Senate in the afternoon in order to ensure its passage on that day. The bill is the Combating Anti-Semitism, Hate and Extremism Bill. It's a comprehensive package of reforms which creates serious offences for hate preachers and leaders seeking to radicalise young Australians.
Okay.
It increases.
Let's go to clip number 14 here, just quickly here to finish off this our little anti-Semitic tirade here. Let's go to clip number 14.
We let in, mind you, immigrants from Africa, Ethiopian Jews, who come into this country. I think it's the first time that we have actually transported black Africans from Africa, not to enslave them, but in fact to liberate them.
What? Sorry, what did King Jew just say? You know, the last time a bunch of Ethiopian Jews went to Israel, they pretended to give them vaccines and actually made them all sterile, actually sterilized all of them with birth control without their knowledge. That was the last time a bunch of Ethiopian Jews tried to become Israeli citizens. People were asking, people were like, what? Why would he even say this? For the first time, we're taking Africans out of Africa, not to enslave them, but to liberate them. Is he talking about the fact that all the slave ships were Jewish? Is that what he means? Is he referencing the fact that the transatlantic slave trade was monopolized by Jewish interest? That the whole reason we have had slavery in this country was because of the Jews that lived in the South, like, was it Aaron Moses, I think it was? Maybe that's what he's referencing. Still, it's weird to bring that up because they always deny it. You know, it's like I said, man, it really does suck. But if you're going to tell me it's illegal to be anti-Semitic, I have a wealth of information to draw upon. So don't do it. So how about you don't do it? How about you let us criticize the warmongering assholes in Israel all we want? And how about we get to make fun of Shlomo and Shabbos and whoever else wants to come over here and dictate to Americans what we can and can't believe about them and their friends and family and their behavior? How about you all shut up and embrace America, the country that has given more freedoms and more opportunity and more benefits to America than has ever existed before? How about we all continue to enjoy these freedoms together, or you are my enemy, you're trying to destroy my heritage, destroy the freedoms that my forefathers fought for, and you have to be destroyed now. So it's up to you. The choice is yours. Personally, I'm happy either way. I would love if the Jews would hop on board and help America regain our sovereignty. Instead, they're doing the exact opposite. And so we can't stand for that. And we have to stop it. And we have to not be afraid to say so. So I'm not going to go to jail for saying everything I've said this segment. And that's a beautiful and wonderful thing that we will preserve in this country. Over my dead body. I guess, in a word, Shabbos, you absolute rat, over my dead body, Kestenbaum. We'll be right back.
If you ask Grok, or if you ask a sports nutritionist, or if you ask the nutritionists on the Olympic teams, they will tell you that creatine is absolutely a must. TheAlexJonesStore.com already has the very best creatine you can get on the market. Now we're introducing this, and I am extremely excited. Let me introduce you to this bad boy that comes in two delicious flavors. That is the recommended daily allowance of the highest quality type of creatine. Right there, concentrated, the very best. We get it from the top lab in the country, the highest rating, 5 milligrams of this a day. Most people think creatine is just about better muscle, healthier, more stamina. It's been proven. It's been documented. I'll show you what Grok had to say about it here in just a moment. But the first thing you need to understand is that it's not just making your muscles better or your body be able to do more exercise. It's doing all these incredible things for your brain and everything else. And that's really more and more what scientists are saying people should focus on with creatine. And just since I've been taking creatine for the last few months, it has had dramatic effects on my clarity, my focus, my energy, especially when used with ultramethylene blue. Again, everybody knows about muscle and performance, or most people do, but what are the other benefits? Grok says secondary emerging benefits, improves anaerobic capacity and power output, may increase glycogen storage in muscles when combined with carbs. Potential brain benefits, improves cognitive performance under sleep deprivation or mental fatigue. Possible neuroprotective effects being studied in traumatic brain injury, Parkinson's, depression, etc. May benefit vegetarians and others who have a lower level of creatine in their diet. Who benefits the most? Older adults, strength and power, people with low dietary creatine. It goes on and on. Bottom line, if you're not taking creatine, you're crazy, and we've got the best.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the War Room. Second hour is on, and I'm joined live by Stuart Rhodes and Ivan Raiklin. They're there in Washington, D.C., having just attended the hearing for the suspected, the accused pipe bomber, January 6th pipe bomber. Gentlemen, how are you today?
Good to go, brother. How are you doing?
Very good. So tell us, what is the latest?
Yeah, so basically what just occurred, we just finished up listening in the front row behind a few witnesses before the Judiciary Committee, Subcommittee on January 6th Select Subcommittee, if you will. And the chairman, right outside of the chairman's office, Congressman Barry Loudermilk, who is from Georgia. It's oddly enough, Congressman Loudermilk actually represented Roseanne Boylan, one of the two that was murdered on that day. She was actually murdered by D.C. Metropolitan Police Department officer Lila Morris. Not a single mention during that hearing of that. There was a few mentions of Ashley Babbitt murdered by U.S. But they didn't even mention the U.S. Capitol Police officer, Michael Byrd. Bottom line here, though, Harrison, is that this was a sham hearing. I think we both agree to it. And effectively, they were trying to push the narrative, the DOJ, that Brian Cole Jr. is effectively, although it's alleged, they're trying to frame the national narrative to believe that he is the actual pipe bomber. And we don't buy one bit of it, primarily because the lead prosecutor, Jocelyn Valentine, is the same prosecutor that went after General Flynn and that went after the Proud Boys in order to cover for the deep state over the last, at this point, we're going on 9 years.
Yeah, and she's the one that suborned perjury. She's been caught red-handed pressuring a Proud Boy who later admitted that he was being pressured into a false confession. He's since come clean and said that the only reason he did it is he was facing, you know, 30 years of life in prison. So that was, what was his name?
Jeremy Bertino.
Jeremy Bertino, right.
This is the face of the individual that we're referring to. She's the Deputy Chief of National Security at the U.S. Attorney's Office, Jocelyn Valentine. Again, prosecutor versus General Flynn, Proud Boys, and now Brian Cole Jr. We don't buy one bit of it. I mean, he's innocent until proven guilty, and so far the evidence clearly shows there's not even close to enough evidence for anyone to even consider him as pipe bomber.
It was a bit of a bittersweet experience. Actually, it's like deja vu all over again. I know what it's like as a persecuted J6 political prisoner to have a show trial going on in Congress to set the narrative while you're waiting for trial in pretrial detention and solitary confinement. That's being done to Mr. Cole right now. I do want to give props to Clay Higgins on the committee. He was the most hardcore when it came to pointing out the reality that J6 was a fenced reaction and a setup. But even he apparently is buying the sell that Cole is the actual pipe bomber. And it seems like his questions to some of the witnesses there, it seems like he was buying into the idea that because he's black, they didn't want to use him. They didn't want to make a big deal out of him being the pipe bomber. Only now, you know, now the Trump administration's in under Cash Patel, are they actually going after him? I think that's false. I think he's being misled. So I'm hoping that we can help set the record straight. I think the biggest tells are on J6. You had two Secret Service agents sitting there in their cars finishing their lunch after they were told by a counterintelligence officer in the U.S. Capitol Police that there's a bomb next to them, like right there. They just sat there for two more minutes and finished their lunch. And so did U.S. Capitol Police officer too. It was D.C. Metro. So they sat there and finished their lunch and didn't move while after being told there's a bomb next to them. They didn't cordon off the area. And when Loudermilk, the committee chairman, was asking questions about that, basically the answer was, well, it could have just been, you know, adrenaline of the day or incompetency and bad training. So wait a minute. So the Secret Service has bad training? D.C. Metro has bad training. They don't understand how to react to a potential pipe bomb.
Do you need to be trained to know go away from bomb? Well, like,
right. Exactly. So first thing you do is you get off the X. You get away from the out of the blast radius of a pipe bomb. The next thing you do is you cordon off the area so no one else goes through there. Instead, there were civilian women and kids walking by. There was train traffic and vehicle traffic. As Steve Baker has pointed out in his excellent piece on this at Blaze Media. And the other thing he pointed out is that those two, one of the agents that, the agent that went over to the Secret Service and warned them was one of two agents who were walking around after they got a bomb scare at the RNC.
The whole thing is suspicious. Stay there, guys. We'll be back in 90 seconds.
We
to make it, men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Hello, friends. Welcome to my home. We have all kinds of supplements.
Sometimes we have BOGO Sups.
We're always coming out with new products, and this is one of my favorites. You can shop for all of our supplements and apparel right here on the phone app.
Peeling back the layers of the day's events to reveal the core truth. War Room with Harrison Smith.
Welcome back, folks. This is the War Room, Infowars.com, band.video. Remember to go to thealexjonesstore.com. It is a 40% off mega sale happening right now. Everything on thealexjonesstore.com is 40% off. No discount needed. Sale ends tonight, January 14th at midnight. You also only have 3 days left to enter to win our Ford Raptor plus $10,000 cash giveaway. Every order placed today gets you 50 times entries on the Raptor plus our brand new giveaway, a Ford 250 diesel plus $10,000 in cash. The sale ends tonight at midnight. Go to thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison now to take advantage of 40% off store-wide massive sale, and you get entered to win both of these very awesome trucks for the next 3 days, but the sale ends tonight at midnight. With that, I'm happy to once again go to Ivan Raiklin and Stuart Rhodes. Of course, our regular viewers know them well. They're there in Washington, D.C., outside of the office of Representative Barry Loudermilk. So, guys, what was the purpose of the committee meeting today? Like, what were they trying to achieve? What were they talking about? Who was there? Because this wasn't a criminal proceeding like we've seen before with the pipe bomber going in to make a plea or anything. What was the purpose of this event today?
Well, if you go by the title of the actual hearing, it is essentially to continue the investigation into the J5, J6 pipe bomber investigation, right? But when you look at the witnesses that were brought forth, three Republican witnesses and then one Democrat witness, no one really had a role in investigating the pipe bomb except for maybe the Democrat witness was called in to he was the deputy section chief of the Capitol siege section that went after all January 6ers. So I guess indirectly you can say that. But it's very telling to know that as you observe and listen, and Jamie Ratskin was there on that committee, subcommittee was waved in, I think. And he is even promoting the narrative that Brian Cole Jr. is the pipe bomber.
Yeah.
So that immediately was the first immediate tell for me that this is a total deep state cover up. Yeah. If Jamie Raskin is in agreement with some of the Republicans on that committee, yep. It's just straightly in your face. They didn't mention Jocelyn Valentine. And actually today, for the second day in a row, I've gotten a hit piece from the deep state on me for confronting in a very peaceful, cordial, professional manner, the assistant U.S. attorney on this case. As I asked her a few questions in a very calm, professional, low key demeanor, and she did not want to address any of the questions of I basically asked, why do you think America believes this Patsy pipe bomber, considering you had a role in the General Flynn case, the Proud Boys case? You basically compelled false witness by Jeremy Bertino in the Proud Boys case and so on and so forth. And now the deep state's kind of scrambling to try to discredit me because we're shining the light. And now that Stewart's here,
we played
the entire
that video.
Media complex was just focused in on him today.
Right. I even think about it. Is this your first time back to the Capitol, Stewart, or you've been back there a few times?
No, it's my first time back. When I first got out, I came into the Capitol and advocated for release of Jeremy Brown, whether
it's right.
6 years who are still being held in prison. And then Judge Mehta tried to ban me from the Capitol. It's my first time back since then. But I want to emphasize something. As Ivan was saying, the entire focus is on Brian Cole. And like Loudermilk asked the witnesses, well, basically the sell was, oh, it's just incompetence. It's incompetence and dereliction of duty by the leadership is why they just sat on this for 5 years. And only when you got competent leaders under Cash Patel and Bongino that you now get a solving of a case. That's complete nonsense. I believe the fix is in the deep state is making sure that Steve Baker's disclosures, his investigative journalism identifying the actual pipe bomber, is what they are trying to cover up. That's why they magically found this guy just, you know, weeks later. It's because they want to cover up for the deep state Fed's direction. And like Ivan said, it's both parties now. Now, I think some of them have good intent. I believe Clay Higgins is a patriot with good intentions, but he's being misled along with the others who might have good intent to believe this guy is guilty. And I believe he's a patsy. And really, like I said, so Steve Baker's article points out that the two counter-surveillance officers from the Capitol Police made a beeline straight for a Bush outside of the Black Caucus headquarters, as their institute for the Congressional Black Caucus, looking under a Bush there, didn't find anything. They made a beeline. 2 minutes later, they found the pipe bomb under a Bush outside the DNC. So why don't they just go to those two Bushes only? And that Bush, the first one they went to outside of the Black Caucus Institute, that is where the pipe bomber is later seen on video, sitting down and going under the bush and doing something and getting up and walking away. So it's just bizarre. It makes no sense at all. They would know to go to that bush unless they were in on it, unless it was a setup. Brian Cole can't get the intelligence operatives in the Capitol Police to go do things like that. Only they can do that. Only someone on the inside can do that. Brian Cole can't tell two Secret Service agents, don't worry about it. Just sit back and finish your lunch. It's okay. Only being told it's an exercise is how that would happen. So I think it stinks to high heaven, and that's why I'm here, standing for his right to due process, too. It's a time for all Americans to come together and demand due process for everyone. Doesn't matter what party's in power. Doesn't matter what they're accused of. We cannot have people being railroaded, and the excuse is always incompetency. It's not incompetency. It's malice.
Well, and I am having sort of flashbacks to the January 6th fake show trial, because that was a show trial. And people don't understand that this is what show trials look like. I mean, they have all of the appearance of a real trial, but in the case of the January 6th Select Committee, the defense wasn't allowed to put on a defense at all, the people accused weren't allowed to put on a defense at all.
It's not prime time. It's so weak. I mean, it's so
weak. Why wasn't Steve Baker here as a witness? Why wasn't Kyle Serafin here as a witness, a man who was originally assigned for the surveillance detail that was surveilling the home that was right next to where that Capitol Police officer was living? That's where the EBT card came from, right? So they were surveilling that Metro card. That's where the Metro card came from. So they were surveilling two suspected people, persons 2 and 3, that were considered suspects. They happened to be living right next door to where the Capitol Police officer was living also. And so how come he's not here testifying? So key witnesses are missing, and no one's even talking about from the anyone, police. Any possibility. Yeah, the two counterintelligence officers that found the pipe bomb.
Surveillance guys.
How come they're not testifying? The two Secret Service agents who just sat there and finished their lunch. How come they're not being put on the spot and asked, why did you just finish your lunch after being told that? What did they tell you that made you not get up and leave the area, instead just finish your lunch? So that's what's not happening. We'll see if they fix that in future hearings, but it's not looking good.
I mean, if I was advising this committee and this particular member of Congress, I mean, I basically created this little slideshow on who potentially was involved in the Fed's direction. It's all of the law enforcement and political leadership of the legislative branch that were potentially involved. Because you got to remember that the primacy on authority of law enforcement in the Capitol is the Capitol Police Board. They're appointed by the Speaker of the House and the President, the Senate Majority Leader, or the President of the Senate. They want to take that authority. And so from there, you have the Senate and House Sergeants at Arms that direct the U.S. Capitol Police on what they will and will not do. So if you want to run a covert action, if you will, within the Capitol grounds and inside of the Capitol, the authority to do that is the Capitol Police Board at the direction of the Speaker and the Senate Majority Leader.
And am I wrong?
Evidence is supporting that.
And he's in their training division, which guess who is
the training
part of the training division? That same Capitol Police officer that is suspected.
Yeah.
Well, and tell me if I'm wrong.
In the training division.
Is it true the Capitol Police are one of the only federal agencies that is immune to FOIA requests?
Yes, because they're part of the legislative branch. This is how secretive they are, is that you cannot FOIA it. You cannot get a Brady request from a judicial proceeding. What is his name? Tom Fitton over at Judicial Watch. He was the only lawsuit that tried to do that. And guess what? A Republican speaker and a Democrat speaker, their attorneys blocked that from taking place. On that note, this is key and important. Maybe this is the first time I'm saying this publicly, is Speaker Mike Johnson's former, one of her senior lawyers, her name is Ashley Callum, used to be counsel for oversight and I think judiciary. She actually
recently went over to the same firm that Andrew Weissman is working at. And my sources are telling me that she has been playing a role in making sure that Loudermilk doesn't have a separate committee, but instead a subcommittee under judiciary so that they can be, they can make sure that his investigative powers only rest with scrutinizing the DOJ and the FBI and never touching the U.S. Capitol Police. So if the allegation that the U.S. Capitol Police officer was the alleged pipe bomber placer, if senior leaders of the U.S. Capitol Police, one murdered Ashley Babbitt, that's Michael Byrd, another lied before the, in the Oath Keepers trial, David Lazarus, who happened to be the special
agent
of Dignitary Protection Division, was the lead witness. He actually served directly for Nancy Pelosi and was the lead witness against the Oath Keepers, along with Harry Dunn. Okay. And it's been proven through video analysis by Steve Baker, once again, that that guy completely perjured himself. Well, the evidence is overwhelming at this point that the U.S. Capitol Police had a role in the Fed's insurrection, the most role, and its subsequent cover-up.
Absolutely. Absolutely right. So, I mean, it's bizarre.
It's not mentioned in the hearing.
Right.
Not a single mention
of
the U.S. Capitol Police.
You had more like a radical communist. What's his name? Moskowitz? Was like, oh, I see Stuart Rose, the leader of the Proud Boys. And by the way, he wasn't pardoned. He is still a convicted seditionist. This is what I've been saying for a long time. The fact that I wasn't pardoned, or the other Oath Keepers and Proud Boys are still waiting for pardons, we were commuted only, that just helps them further the false narrative that there really was a plot. Otherwise, they would have got a pardon. So he attacked me, but then I was attacked by a Republican. That caught me off guard. Yeah, Troy Nels from Texas, my own state, said, well, it's clear that President Trump wasn't involved in this, but the militias did have a plan. Stuart Rhodes and the Oath Keepers and the Proud Boys, Stuart Rhodes himself said, if Trump won't do it, we will. That's not what I said. Wasn't referring to anything to do with going inside the Capitol. So I'm being attacked by a Republican. And so what I'm concerned about, is what I suspected for a long time, is there are people inside the Republican circles who want to pin J6 on the Oath Keepers and Proud Boys as though we really did have a plan to attack the Capitol. And that's their strategy, is to blame us and say, oh, President Trump didn't have anything to do with it. They did. As though all the lawfare used against Trump was not also used against us. All the lies, all the spin, all the false narrative, it lives on not just from Democrats, but also from Republicans. It's disgusting.
Congressman Troy Nels, if you're listening in, I'm going to send this clip to you, sir. Enrique Tarrio, the chair of the Proud Boys at the time, never entered the Capitol. He wasn't even in D.C. The leader of the Oath Keepers, Stuart Rose right here, never entered the Capitol. The Oath Keepers that were in the Capitol were helping U.S. Capitol Police officers to make sure that there was calm and peaceful First Amendment activity.
And there was no evidence presented in my trial of any smoking gun, direction from me, order from me, or a plan for me to my guys to go in the Capitol. At the end, they just said the jury could assume, they could presume there was an implied conspiracy by the fact that the guys went inside, that it was formed on the way up the steps. No plan. That's what they fell back on with a biased jury in D.C. We were found guilty based really on our free speech.
That relied on Harry Dunn
right.
And David Lazarus's testimony.
All that was to counter the reality that our guys helped Capitol Police inside. Yeah. So Harry Dunn and Lazarus got up there and lied and said, oh, no, they didn't help us. They were hostile when they were not even together that day.
And that was
so it's a completely false narrative.
That was proven false with Steve Baker coming out with the video showing that at the time that under oath, he said he was doing one thing. He was actually completely across the Capitol, at least 10 minutes away from the location that he said he was.
Yeah, he was in tunnels under the Senate building at that time. They were not together. So they had to lie because the truth was our guys went inside and helped cops multiple times.
And also, that is outright perjury. I mean, those guys should go to jail, in my opinion. And then you remember Steve Baker was arrested right after that. So another thing, Steve Baker comes out with a big bombshell that makes the Capitol Police look bad. And what do you know? Looks like maybe y'all's feed cut out. I think we may have lost him there. Guys, can you hear me? Oh, shoot. Okay. We'll try to reconnect with them, and I want to hear the rest of that because it is, very strange they're even having these hearings after all the alleged pipe bomber hasn't been convicted yet. So, you know, if you get the conviction and then want to look into, you know, why it took so long to get there, but it sounds like they're having this hearing on the assumption that this is the right guy and they got the right guy. But we don't know that yet. That has not been proven in court. And I'm not even sure if the guy is declared guilty or not. I don't even remember if that's happened yet. So very weird to see that they're even having a hearing about this when the legal case hasn't even gone to trial. That is very bizarre. And I think I agree with Stuart Rhodes that it reeks of January 6th, where you have this simultaneous fake public show trial while real trials are going on behind the scenes. But the point of the show trial was to poison the jury pools against for the real trial. Sorry, you guys got cut off there.
That's exactly right. We're listening to you. That's exactly correct. The whole point is to poison the jury pool, to try them in a court of public opinion ahead of time, not talk about any other possibility, any other suspect, not talk about the one that's already been identified at all. They just buy into the false narrative. So I'm going to say this. I think Pam Bondi, Cash Patel, Todd Blanche, and Bongino before he left, and Judge Jeanine are all complicit in the railroading of an innocent man. The Trump administration, it's as though it was still under the Biden administration. The same actors, Jocelyn Ballantyne, lead prosecutor, the deep state hit person for taking people down, is all being used to get after another innocent man to cover for the deep state. It's disgusting to see the Trump administration do this. It's disgusting.
And Harrison, if I may just add a separate point on this, is that, I mean, if I was recommending the next hearing to actually start to get and unravel the truth, you must actually have the following three witnesses. Stuart Rhodes, because he understands the weaponization from Pelosi to the judiciary, the DOJ, to the courts. He can explain it at the high level strategic level. Number two, Enrique Tarrio can explain that weaponization as it applied to the Proud Boys and connect that back to Nancy Pelosi and the United States Capitol and the U.S. Capitol Police Board and Capitol Police. And the last person would be Jeremy Brown, because he was actually – they attempted to recruit him in the run-up to January 6th. And if America starts to learn what we – you know, your audience, we know, but for the lemming Republicans of the world, to include Troy Nels and Barry Loudermilk and the rest of these guys, they just don't know. They don't know reality because they were duped by the Fox News of the world, of which was pretty much complicit in the January 6th Fed's direction and its subsequent cover-up. So next hearing, Stuart Rhodes, Enrique Tarrio, and Jeremy Brown to lay out the entire case of what occurred in the run-up on and after January 6th, which was a rejection of an illegal, illegitimate 2020 election that was fraudulent on many fronts, to include the COVID con. I'm rehashing everything that this audience knows, but it's for the broader public.
And I would add Kyle Cerf and Steve Baker too, just directly on point for this. They should be here talking about all their findings, which directly refute and prove this is nonsense. Steve Baker's exposed the fact they went straight for those two bushes. How could they possibly know all the bushes all around that area to go look at those two places where the pipe bomber had been? How would they possibly know that unless they were in on it? No. And why would the Secret Service agents sit there? So the Secret Service agents brought up to testify while they just sat there, and the D.C. Metro officer also, the same guys, also just sat there.
And for those lawyers that are out there, the FBI has primacy, this and that, I direct you to Title II U.S. Code, Section 1967, Paragraph B1. It lays out the U.S. Capitol Police's concurrent jurisdiction with MPD, and it extends well beyond Capitol grounds. It includes where the DNC pipe bomb was placed. It includes where the RNC pipe bomb was placed. It includes where Clay Higgins exposed the FBI buses over at Union Station. So the Capitol Police, just overwhelming evidence showcasing that the Capitol Police had a very instrumental role in that fence direction.
And one more thing that I just found out just recently, you have a CIA attorneys who served on the J6 Select Committee, who were doing all of the interrogation of the witnesses for the J6 Select Committee. I did not know that until today. I just found that out.
So at the very top of the January 6th committee that Pelosi constituted with Benny Thompson and Liz Cheney, you had at the very top, the staff director, the guy that basically orchestrated all the hearings and witnesses and testimony, was one of the 51 spies who lied with John Brennan and was the inspector general for John Brennan when he was over at the CIA. So, becomes the staff director and then brings in two CIA attorneys to run the questioning.
To work as staff.
It's kind of odd that Shawnee Kirkhoff allegedly is now over at the CIA post being here for a couple of years at the U.S. Capitol Police.
So I'm not surprised at all. The CIA's fingerprints are all over J6. And yet that's not being discussed by this committee.
Are there any congressmen or congresswomen that are privy to the truth? I mean, we know you've said Loudermilk and Troy Nels are obviously buying the establishment's line.
I think Clay Higgins has good intent. I think he wants to get at it. He was the firebrand up there Him and a lady from Wyoming. Can't remember her name.
Harriet Hageman.
Hageman from Wyoming.
She replaced Liz Cheney, oddly enough.
Good. So they were the most aggressive about going after the fact that it was a Fed's direction. They're really doing a good job. But they're also still buying this nonsense that, well, it might be because he's black. That's why they didn't want to, go after him, because didn't fit the narrative of white supremacists that they're trying to sell. So I think they're believing that. I think that's a lie. I think they're being sold a lie, and I hope we can help correct that.
I mean, to answer the question though, Thomas Massie's probably the one that's first and foremost exposing the pipe bomb and we think is the reality of the situation.
Like he said about the two Secret Service agents, it must have been a really good lunch for them to sit there.
Right.
So he was there. He popped in and sat for a little while.
Oh, he did.
So we hope that, you did. Yeah.
Massie?
He did. Yeah.
I believe
I saw him pop in and sit down for a little bit. So, unless I'm mistaken, he was there. So
we saw Jordan pop in. He didn't say anything, but I didn't see Massie.
Right. So there are some legit, I believe Clay Higgins is a true patriot. I think Massie obviously is. And I think there's a lady from Wyoming, Hageman. So I think there's people that want to get to the truth, but I think they're being sold a bill of goods. And here's the problem. That's the problem with bipartisan politics, right? They want to believe that their party is now doing the right thing when they're in charge. And it's just not true. But in fact, Loudermilk, when he was talking about the FBI agents in the crowd, he said, oh, so there were some FBI agents used for crowd control that day. He's repeating the nonsense that Kash Patel put out there to cover for the fact that 274 undercover FBI agents were disclosed to have been in the crowd. Loudermilk's drinking the Kool-Aid from Kash Patel. Oh, they were there doing crowd control. And so he was asking witnesses, so they were there being used for crowd control, stating that as a fact, then asking, so, would you call someone like that as a witness? And then the former prosecutor guy is like, well, maybe not. They were just there for crowd control. So it's really weird and sick to watch the cell that Patel put out to cover that massive disclosure just being brushed under the rug. Oh, must be for crowd control. We're okay.
Okay. So we only about a minute left.
The person that owns the Kool-Aid stand that's distributing the Kool-Aid is Jocelyn Valentin, and she sends it over to Judge Jeanine Pirro. Jeanine Pirro sends it over to the Kash Patel and Dan Bongino, who's now
right.
he quit, and then up the chain to Pam Bondi. And then they had that press conference as they're pounding their chest. We found the pipe bomber. Meanwhile, they were sold a bag of Kool-Aid from Jocelyn Valentin.
Right.
I mean, but trust that.
But it brings up what Patel did when it came to the disclosure of 274 undercover FBI agents. That didn't come from Patel's office. It came from Congress. But when it was disclosed, he spun it immediately. Oh, they were improperly used as crowd control that day. Not that President Trump first saw it. He's like, there's no way they were there for a legitimate purpose of law enforcement. And President Trump was correct. But Kash Patel, being the water carrier he is, a little deep state bitch that he is, jumped right in and protected it. And now Loudermilk is just accepting that hook, line, and sinker. That, oh, yeah, they were just there for crowd control. Let's just forget about that. Why aren't they talking about that? Why don't we bring some of those agents, put them on the stand and say, what were you doing on January the 6th? Were you doing crowd control? We don't see any evidence of that. See, Baker said, I watched all the video. I see zero evidence of them being used for crowd control that day. That's right. Bullshit, as Steve Baker said.
Absolutely. All right. Final thoughts from Ivan. We have 30 seconds left.
Yeah, real quick, is that in order to get to the truth of January 6th, you must bring in the U.S. Capitol Police General Counsel, Thomas Aquinas Tobias, that has all the communications records and decisions on persecuting and prosecuting everybody as he sent that evidence over, the manipulated CCTV footage and sworn testimony of Lazarus, Dunn, et cetera, over to the DOJ. That's it. Tad Tobias. We got to go after him.
And you got to bring in the hardcore witnesses, Kyle Serafins, the Steve Bakers. You got to bring in the people that were actually there. Like the two counterintelligence agents, the counter-surveillance agents that found the pipe bomb, bring them in and ask them, why'd you go to that bush?
Yep. This is such an opportunity, and if the Republicans blow this, it is not good for them. Ivan Raiklin, Stuart Rhodes, thank you so much.
God bless
you, Lord. G-Man, all the free-flowing methylene blue is now mine!
No way, you evil scum. Methylene blue is for everyone. Order Methylene blue at the alexjonesstore.com.
We're gonna make it, men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now!
at thealexjonesstore.com.
I'm not an influencer, by the way. I'm a patriot and a journalist and a pundit and analysis and a futurist and father and a guy who loves God. Influencer comes from the time of Plato and Aristotle and Socrates. And influencers are people that use rhetoric without facts and reality and logic to convince dumb people. So when the globalists call you all influencers and you go, yeah, I'm an influencer. It just shows how stupid you are. Stop calling yourselves influencers. I'm a philosopher. I'm a warrior. I'm a game changer. I'm a historian. I'm a fighter. I'm a pioneer. I'm an explorer. I got red blood. It's pumping through my big heart fast. I like life and freedom and justice. I like women. I like red meat. I like guns. I like sunsets and puppy dogs. And ladies of the night, to quote Waylon Jennings.
Sold out to it. They're blind to their cowards. You don't want to be part of them. Like Patrick Henry says, forget you are our brethren. Go from us in peace. Crouch down and lick the hand that feeds you. Let your chains sit lightly upon you. As for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The truth is out there, and they don't want you to know it. There's still people that don't want to believe me out there. How are you going to tell me that Frog isn't totally gay?
Well, damn, I guess Alex was right. That frog was super gay.
Receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
All right, welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is The War Room. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Let's get back into what's going on with Iran, as it does seem like we are very much on the cusp of action there. And we showed you that a lot of military personnel are being shifted around the Middle East right now. Basically, a lot of things are aligning, very similar actions to what happened in June when we bombed Iran the first time, including Benjamin Netanyahu's plane leaving Israel and going to Cyprus in Greece, exactly the same thing that he did the last time Iran was bombed. Let's go to clip number 7 here. This is a little bit of tactical strategic reality about the difficulty of the challenge that they're facing now. Let's watch.
Iran's borders remain the same as they were 500 years ago. All the world's superpowers, the Romans, Arabs, Mongols, Turks, Russians, British, and the United States have tried to conquer it, but failed. Even today, if the United States talks about conquering Iran, it's nearly impossible. I'll explain why. First, Iran's size is larger than you might imagine. Nearly 7 countries, like the UK, could easily fit within it. To its west lies the Zagros Mountains, and it boasts a coastline marked by extremely rocky and unforgettable mountains. You'll also find extremely high mountains along the borders with Pakistan and Afghanistan. To the north, the Albert Mountains form a natural shield. Even if someone crosses these, they'll encounter two large mountains within Iran, where death, not victory, is the norm. Iran possesses so much oil that even if cut off from the world, it could meet its energy needs for the next 200 years. Iran possesses a massive arsenal of missiles capable of burning entire regions to ashes. Therefore, conquering Iran by land is beyond anyone's reach. That's why the fire has now been lit from within Iran. Because when its own people rise up against their own country, no one can stop them from becoming slaves.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And of course, that is obviously the strategy that's being pursued at this point. Even have people like Mike Pompeo coming out and saying the Iranian regime is in trouble. Bringing in mercenaries is the last best hope. Riots in dozens of cities in the Basaj under siege. Mashed Tehran, Zenadan, next stop, Baluchistan. 47 years of fighting this regime. POTUS 47, coincidence. Happy New Year to every Iranian in the street. Also to every Mossad agent walking beside them. Yes, it's a fabricated, infiltrated color revolution, exactly like we saw under Ukraine, and for very similar reasons. Trump said to strike Iran in the next 24 hours as Brit embassy closes, but Ayatollah makes last-minute stop to executions. They say at least 3,428 have been killed in the regime's crackdown on protesters. Some people are saying numbers up to $20,000 dead, rather. I don't buy it, personally. So, we'll see. The physical reality on the ground is really the thing that is dictating our actions at this point. You know, a lot of people were pointing out that there was sort of a dearth of U.S. Navy ships in the area, and that being a counter signal to, you know, war with Iran, since we'd want to have our ships there. It also might be the opposite, right? We also might not want our ships in the region because we know that we can't stop their ballistic missile barrages and we don't want to see an aircraft carrier go down. So that could sort of be both. But Iran, like we saw it in June, they have the ability to overwhelm the Iron Dome. They have the ability to strike sites inside Israel and overwhelm any defenses that they can put up. And Israel is not a big place, and it has most of its really, you know, primary infrastructure in a very small area, sort of this triangle towards the north. They could be utterly destroyed by Iran's ballistic missiles. Our missions there, our bases, could be utterly overwhelmed by Iranian missiles. The infiltration has been moderately successful, but seems like the Iranian regime responded forcefully, stopped the communication that was happening, the organization and coordination that was happening. And so, and there, then there was big, you know, counter protest. And, you know, these things can be distorted by our perception, right? We're seeing everything through the lens of the mainstream media. But like, was Trump close to being ousted from office through all of 2020? I mean, if you were, you know, an Iranian and you were watching news about America in 2020, you might have believed that, oh, the regime is on the cusp of falling and they just need a little bit of help and it'll all come down. I don't think we were nowhere close to anything like that happening in 2020. So, I mean, that you got to understand, even if you do have these massive protests, even if the protests are violent, they're burning down government buildings. Same thing happened to America 5 years ago. We didn't fall. We didn't collapse. That's not a symbol of an inevitable collapse of a society or a power structure. But that's what it's being played up and being presented, because it's being used as the casus belli, as the excuse for war. We have to go support these protesters that are so close to achieving victory. Well, that argument doesn't make sense if the protests aren't gigantic and aren't natural and created from outside and aren't anywhere close to succeeding. So they're going to push that story no matter what. It's not true, though. We go to some more videos about this. Since I have a lot. Let's go to clip number 3 here, because let's see, Iran Live. Donald Trump deploys 3 missile-armed destroyers as strike is imminent. Donald Trump had to threaten to hit Iran hard. Yeah, I should say that there are naval forces approaching Iran right now. I believe we have at least one aircraft carrier, I think, just entered into the Red Sea this morning. So they are moving around a little bit. But just in June, when we attacked Iran, we had a lot of naval forces on both sides of the equation, like on the Mediterranean and the Red Sea side. But not this time, although there are people, there are forces moving in that direction. I still don't think Trump wants to get boots on the ground, but that is what's necessary if we're actually going to go after Iran. Maybe he thinks that we will have like a Venezuela 2.0, like that it'll go in and capture the Ayatollah and then, you know, put somebody else in charge. But I really don't see that as happening. So, you know, they've got the ability to respond powerfully with all of their missiles. They've got the land that makes it almost impossible to invade without an absolutely massive force. I mean, there's, I don't know what the plan, I don't know what Israel is planning exactly or what America is planning exactly. What is the game plan here? Because as far as I can tell, until you take out the ballistic missile batteries, it's not a smart thing to launch an attack on Iran. So we'll see how it goes. But the entire thing that this is predicated on is obviously fraudulent, is obviously a manufactured reality out of the CIA. Let's go to this is John Kirikou on clip number 3, explaining who they want to try to place on the throne of Iran, Reza Pahlavi. Let's watch.
Let's break it down. So Reza Pahlavi is the son of the Shah of Iran, who was thrown out of Iran in early 1979, February of 1979, came into exile briefly in the United States. That led to the Iran hostage crisis. Then we forced him out to the Bahamas and then to Panama and then to Egypt, and he died in Egypt. Reza Pahlavi is the son. He was a young guy when this happened. He was, a teenager. Well, now he's in his 60s. And he's never been to Iran since the 1970s. He's also something of a playboy in the Washington area. He's not a player in Iranian exile circles, but he seems to have a whole lot of money. Well, over the last couple of weeks, several things have happened. Number one, the Israeli government spilled the beans and they admitted that they have been financing him. So is he a Mossad asset? You bet he's a Mossad asset. Mossad is saying it. Number two, he doesn't know anything about contemporary Iran. Patrick Bet-David, the big podcaster, invited Reza Pahlavi to go on his podcast a week ago. And Reza never called him back, never even attempted to, you know, get his name out there, get his picture out there, talk about his view of a future Iran. He's not interested. Donald Trump has been pressured by people on the neoconservative right to welcome Reza Pahlavi into the Oval Office. He would be the person that the United States would announce is going to be, you know, the guy that we're interested in. And Trump said no, he's not interested. I'm going to give you my own admittedly biased view. My own view is Reza Pahlavi is a joke. He's a caricature, a cartoon character. He lives in a mansion all by himself in Potomac, Maryland. Nobody pays any attention to him except these really rich Iranian exiles, most of whom are in Beverly Hills. The only people who really, really want him to be the leader of Iran are the Israelis. I'll add one other thing. As I said, the guy is a non-entity in Washington. He's a non-entity even in Iranian exile politics. But the Washington Post, which is owned by Jeff Bezos and is the mouthpiece of the 1% of the 1%, ran an op-ed last week that Reza Pahlavi wrote. And he said that he wanted to go back to Iran to usher in a period of democracy. Like, what do you know about democracy? Your father was a fascist dictator who slaughtered his own people and who stole billions upon billions of dollars from the nation's treasury. So you think it should be you who goes back to Iran after 50 years and brings in a period of democracy? Come on, I'm insulted by that. So yeah, this guy's not going to be, I made a comment today kind of offhandedly, and the more I think about it, the more I believe it to be true. He wouldn't survive the walk from the plane to the terminal if he were to fly back to Iran. So he's not going to be the next leader of Iran. And yes, this is the CIA Mossad playbook for regime change. Yes, resist it.
Yeah, 100%. And again, can we not just leave these people alone? I mean, my God, it goes all the way back to, you know, British Petroleum in the early 1900s. It's just been a relentless cycle of regime change, overthrow, revolution, regime change, overthrow, revolution. And why are we, you know, so at odds with them? Israel. I mean, that really is the only reason. Because, I mean, remember, they don't care. They don't actually care. You think they care about Iranian repression? But we're best friends with Saudi Arabia? Okay, what? Like, this is stupid. This is stupid. We currently pay the Taliban $50 million a week. What are you talking about? It's our humanitarian mission. We have to rescue the Iranians. Okay, so they just killed 500,000 Gazans over the last 2 years in a relentless campaign of genocide. We don't care about them, obviously, but now it's a humanitarian obligation because we care so much about the Iran. It's ridiculous. This is ridiculous. It's obviously just a land grab for Israel, and we keep getting pulled into it, and they want to make it illegal for us to talk about it. They want to make it illegal for us to point out that this is the case. Remember, it all goes back to the IHRA definition of anti-Semitism. That essentially says that any criticisms of the Israeli state is therefore anti-Semitic and has to be banned. So they want to be able to do this without even asking us first. Israel and Syria, under U.S. oversight, agreed on coordination mechanism to manage intelligence, military, diplomatic, and trade matters. This is from January 6th. The joint statement emphasized preventing disputes and pursuing long-lasting security and stability for both countries. This is a joint statement on the trilateral meeting between the governments of the United States of America, the State of Israel, and the Syrian Arab Republic. The text of the following statement was released by the governments of the U.S., Israel, and Syria. Under the auspices of the United States, senior Israeli and Syrian officials met in Paris. Donald Trump's leadership in the Middle East enabled productive discussions centered on respect for Syria's sovereignty and stability, Israel's security, and the prosperity for both countries. The State of Israel and the Syrian Arab Republic have reached the following understandings. The sides reaffirmed their commitment to strive towards achieving lasting security and stability arrangements for both countries. Both sides have decided to establish a joint fusion mechanism, a dedicated communication cell to facilitate immediate and ongoing coordination on their intelligence sharing, military de-escalation, diplomatic engagement, and commercial opportunities under the supervision of the United States. The mechanism will serve as a platform to address any disputes promptly and work to prevent misunderstandings. The United States commends these positive steps and remains committed to supporting the implementation of these understandings as part of a broader effort to achieve enduring peace in the Middle East. When sovereign nations cooperate in a respectful and productive way, prosperity will be unleashed. And, you know, sure, they're currently carrying out pogroms against the Christians there. And yes, they are systematically killing the Druze. I mean, we just heard from Netanyahu yesterday about the brutality of the Syrian regime as they literally cut out a man's heart while still eating it like the barbarians that they are, but obviously more preferable to Bashar al-Assad, who, despite being a moderate and a secularist and protecting the Alawite and Christian and Druze communities in Syria, didn't like Israel, so he had to go. Okay, so now we have the barbarians, the psychopaths, the murderous regime killing all of the minority groups in Syria, but that's preferable. Why? Because he's an Israeli puppet. Jelani loves Israel, and that's the only thing that matters. Okay? It's the only thing that matters. All right? If Iran loved Israel, you think they'd care about 20,000 people being killed? They'd be helping them. They'd be spraying white phosphorus on their neighborhoods to help them understand. They don't care. It's just about submission to the New World Order. Submission to the global super state that will be headquartered in Israel, and that destruction of Iran is a key component, the next big step, like that's the next checkpoint. They can't get past that. All the plans fall to nothing. All of the schemes of world domination, having a headquarters in Israel to manage your global empire, all that comes to nothing if you've got a very well-armed and hateful neighbor right there. It doesn't work. So you got to take him out first, take Iran out first, and it doesn't matter if it falls into chaos and it all devolves into mass murder on the streets and Iraq 2.0, Syria 2.0, it's not only doesn't matter, it's kind of like what they want. It actually will keep them occupied. I mean, it's hard to, you know, resist Israel when you're fighting, you know, inter-clan battles over neighborhoods in Tehran. So it's actually much preferable. Ideally, they'll have every single ethnic group in Iran heavily armed and at odds with their neighbors, sort of exactly what we're seeing in Syria now. But of course, it's really hard to understand the Middle East or anything that America does for that matter if you aren't paying attention to Lebanon. Lebanon is like the least mentioned country in the Middle East, except for maybe Jordan. But it is the key to why a lot of things are going on. If you don't recognize that and can't see that, then you're probably scratching your head. Now, obviously, there's a lot of talk about Hezbollah, but it's a misunderstanding about what Hezbollah is and what their goals are and what they've been doing for the last couple decades. So it's very misinterpreted in America anyway, but you want to ask why Venezuela suddenly became a big target for America. I think it probably on top of the priority list is the fact that Hezbollah had a drone construction base there for Iranian drones. They ran cocaine to Europe and used that money to fund the rebuilding of Lebanon in 2006. They had the Isle of Margarita, which was basically a Hezbollah headquarters there in Venezuela, because they don't want Hezbollah to be able to fund themselves and fund the rebuilding of Lebanon like they did after 2006. That's one of the primary reasons we went after Venezuela. Why a lot of the stuff going on in the Middle East right now, why a lot of the discussions are going the way they are, has to do with the attempt to get Hezbollah to disarm. This is another thing that it's just not going to happen. It's just not going to happen. And we showed the video before, Hassan Nasrallah, before he died, saying just flat out, if you're not armed, you're going to die. And that's it. And so it's just the directive from the leader of Hezbollah before his death was never give up your arms. Never. So I don't think that's going to happen. And the Lebanese people have lived through multiple civil wars that were long-lasting and utterly devastating, and they really aren't going to do that ever again. And there's been attempts to cause civil wars in Lebanon over and over again. There was the event where their foreign minister was kidnapped by Saudi Arabia, and they tried to get him to lead a Sunni revolution in Lebanon. And the Sunnis and the Shiites in Lebanon said, no, we're not doing this. They actually went against their religious superiors in the, you know, Wahhabist Sunni command structure and refused to go to war because they'd seen how damaging it had been before. So I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon. Diplomats sought guarantees from Hezbollah that it will hold fire if Iran is attacked, source says. Oh, I bet they did. If we attack Iran, you're not going to attack us, are you? I mean, that would be unfair. You wouldn't do anything so backhanded as that, would you? Just let us attack Iran and don't worry about it. Don't attack us while we're attacking Iran. Okay, I'm sure. Donald Trump's envoy said Wednesday that a plan to end the Gaza war is now moving to phase two with the goal of totally disarming Hamas despite a number of Israeli strikes during the ceasefire. A number of them. So they're trying to get Hamas to willingly disarm themselves. They're trying to get Hezbollah to willingly disarm themselves. Here's the problem, folks. Here's the glaring problem with this whole situation. It's that for the last 2 years, Israel has waged systematic, brutal war against the people of Gaza, utterly destroying them, their infrastructure, poisoning their wells, literally, setting up food distribution points and then shooting everybody who showed up. They have been flagrantly violating international law, committing war crime upon war crime, captured in full color HD and spread all over the internet, and nobody is doing anything to stop them. So then when you go to Hezbollah or you go to Hamas and say, hand over your guns, the international community guarantees your safety, do you think they're going to take that offer? You absolute morons, what do you think is going to be the consequence of 2 years of unrelenting warfare against a enslaved, imprisoned, open-air prison populace in Gaza, with the entire international community being utterly unwilling or incapable to do anything to moderate, let alone stop it? Do you think the people of Lebanon are going to hand over control of their country to you now? Do you think the people that you obviously want to kill are going to willfully disarm themselves under guarantees that you will protect them? No, this whole idiocy in Gaza over the last 2 years has made these types of agreements utterly impossible and has guaranteed greater war, greater conflict into the future. That may have been the point the whole time, but if you wanted Hezbollah to give up their arms, if you wanted them not to attack when you want to attack Iran, if you wanted Hamas to come to some sort of agreement so you can peaceably live next to each other, then you shouldn't have spent 2 years bombing hospitals and elementary schools and refugee camps and food caravans and journalists. So if I was Hezbollah, I wouldn't give up my guns. Are you kidding me? I would have used them a lot more and a lot earlier, actually. I think that was a mistake. I think Hezbollah made a mistake not getting involved in the conflict immediately following October 7th. I think they could have really made a difference then. And we predicted that they would. You remember that on October 9th, I was hosting the Alex Jones Show, and I said, I think if they cross that red line and enter into Gaza, I think Hezbollah is going to come down from the north, and it's not going to be good for Israel. I was wrong about that prediction, but was it the wrong strategy? I don't know. I think maybe if I had been right, and if Hezbollah did enter in a real way, we'd be in a very different world today. But instead, they did the Pager attack. They killed Nasrallah. They killed a bunch of the leadership. Hezbollah is still very strong, very active, very well armed, have a huge cache of missiles, huge cache of operatives operating in Lebanon still. So they're not weakened by any means. And the diplomatic attempts to disarm them aren't going to work. But if Israel wanted them to, you know, willingly hand over control to the Lebanese government, then they wouldn't have spent the last 2 years actively disproving the claim that the international community will be able to stop Israel if and when they try to take over Lebanon in a real way. Because, you know, they want Lebanon just like they want Gaza. They see it as the same, just two pieces of land that were promised them 3,000 years ago and that a bunch of animals live on right now.
Hobbits can feel the power of Methylene Blue. Don't let the evil power win. Order now on the alexjonesstore.com.
The truth is out there, and they don't want you to know it. There's still people that don't want to believe me out there. How are you going to tell me that Frog isn't totally gay?
Well, damn, I guess Alex was right. That frog was super gay.
A creeping mass with an eerie tone smiles on the surface with intentions unknown. Step past the light where truth's overthrown. Welcome, my friend, to the Info Zone.
An oozing mass of liars and snakes bought and paid for. Truth bends and breaks. It inches in close, steals freedoms away, drowns you in chemicals to make you obey.
I woke up this morning, felt the fire turn. Mind clear, feel the power burn. Found the truth in a place that delivers the force. Real strength, real fuel from the source. Methylene Blue lights my mind. Ultimate power, feeling strong and prime. Seymour's gummies, open the door.
Jones store.
Welcome back, folks. Third hour of War Room is on. I'm going to open up for your calls this last hour. We still have a lot to talk about, a lot of videos to show you. And a positive update when it comes to Iran. It looks like we may not be attacking them tonight. Wouldn't that be lovely and wonderful? But I want to go to this video. It's a long one, but we'll watch the whole thing. It's Josh Hawley trying desperately to get a doctor to say whether or not a man can get pregnant. It's exhausting. Let's watch.
Let's also take a trip down memory lane.
This is crazy.
It's the 1990s, Benjamin Netanyahu, Bill Clinton, and Monica Lewinsky. Stick around for this one. So in a scandal that has been largely lost to contemporary memory, Israeli...
I mean, I do take care of patients with different identities. I take care of many women. I take care of people with different identities. And so that's where I paused. I think, I wasn't sure where you were going with that.
Well, the goal is just the truth. So can men get pregnant?
Again, the reason I paused there is I'm not really sure what the goal of the question
is. The goal is just to establish a biological reality. You just said a moment ago that science and evidence should control, not politics. Absolutely. So let's just test that proposition. Can men get pregnant?
I take care of people with many identities, but
can men get
I
pregnant?
Take care of many women that can get pregnant. I do take care of people that don't identify as women. That
can men get pregnant?
Again, as I'm saying,
let me just remind you what you testified to a moment ago. Science and evidence should control, not politics. Absolutely. So can men get pregnant? You're a doctor,
I think. Science and evidence should guide medicine.
Do science and evidence tell us that men can get pregnant? Biological men, can they get pregnant?
I also think yes-no questions like this are a political tool.
No, yes-no questions are about the truth, doctor. Let's not make a mockery of this proceeding. This is about science and evidence, and I'm asking you. You know, the United States Supreme Court just heard arguments yesterday at great length on this question. This is not a hypothetical question. This is not theoretical. It affects real people in their real lives. And you're here as an expert, called by the other side as an expert, and you've been telling us that you follow, right, you're a doctor, and you follow the science and the evidence. So I just want to know, based on the science, can men get pregnant? That's a yes or no question. It really is, I think.
I think you're trying to reduce the complexity of a lot.
I'm not. I'm trying to get, it's not complex. I'm trying to get to an answer, and I'm trying to test, frankly, your veracity as a medical professional and as a scientist. Can men get pregnant?
I think you're also conflating male and female with...
No, I'm not conflating male and female. They're two different things. There's biological men and there's biological women. And I want to know, can men get pregnant?
What you were talking about is biological...
You're not going to answer my question.
Biological males...
This isn't hard, doctor. Can men get pregnant? Yes or no?
I would be more than happy to have a conversation with you that is not coming from a place of trying to be polarized and push.
I'm not trying to be polarizing. I'm trying to ask. I think it is extraordinary that we are here in a hearing about science and about women. And for the record, it's women who get pregnant, not men. We are here about the safety of women and science that shows that this abortion drug causes adverse health events in 11% of cases. That's 22 times greater than the FDA label, another fact you haven't acknowledged. And yet you won't even acknowledge the basic reality that biological men don't get pregnant. There's a difference between biological men and biological women. I don't know how we can take you seriously and your claims to be a person of science if you won't level with this on this basic issue. I thought we were past all of this, frankly. I can't believe we're still here talking about this.
I am a person of science, and I'm also someone here who's here to represent the complex experiences of my patients, and I don't think polarized language or questions serve that goal. I don't think they serve the American people.
It is not polarizing to say that there is a scientific difference between men and women, and I want this to be clear and for the record. It is not polarizing to say that women are a biological reality and should be treated and protected as such. That is not polarizing.
It shouldn't be polarizing, Senator Hawley. It shouldn't be. It is. It is because half of our country has been driven insane by propaganda. So that's unfortunate, but we'll get back. We'll get back to normal. Don't worry. This is all abnormal. We'll get back to normal one day by force. Stay with us. More on the other side. Don't go anywhere.
G-Man, all the free-flowing methylene blue is now mine.
No way, you evil scum. Methylene blue is for everyone.
Order Methylene Blue at the AlexJonesStore.com.
We're gonna make it, men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at the AlexJonesStore.com.
You're listening to The War Room with your host, Harrison Smith. Watch it live right now at X.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. Infowars.com, band.video. It's the War Room. Somebody's back there scrolling Instagram, I see. Got ya. Welcome back to the show, folks. Last hour, we're going to open up the phone lines for your calls this final hour. The number to dial is 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. Still have a lot of videos to show you, a lot of stuff to get into. This broke actually during our show, video from Donald Trump making a statement about Iran. Again, a lot of people, a lot of headlines, a lot of observers seeing that everything is aligning to attack Iran, perhaps in the next 24 hours. Donald Trump, on the other hand, may be willing to stay his hand, it appears. Let's watch.
We've been told that the killing in Iran is stopping. It's stopped. It's stopping. And there's no plan for executions or executions. So I've been told that on good authority. We'll find out about it.
Uh-huh. Why does he have a big gallon of milk there? That's the question. I'm sure it was something with the dairy lobby or something like that. So that's kind of nice, right? I mean, he's saying that we have to go in and stop the killing of the protesters. But now he's saying that they've stopped executing the protesters and that might not be a concern anymore. So maybe we're not going to bomb Iran. But I hate to do this to you, but I did look back. Oh, yeah. They're bringing whole milk back to school lunches. The crew is cheering. The crew is literally cheering in the control room. Yeah! But yeah, that is a very good thing. Move allowing whole and 2% milk to be served. What have they been serving? They've been serving nothing but 1% milk? My God. It's been skim milk since Michelle Obama. That bitch. Excuse me. Pardon me. They probably serve chocolate milk. It's probably skim chocolate milk with 32 grams of sugar per carton because, you know, they care about our health so much. So that's actually good news. Okay, here's the bad news. I went ahead and asked Grok, hey, Grok, what was the last public statement that Trump made before we bombed Iran last year? And it turns out the last statement made on June 19th, 2025 through White House Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt, Trump said, was, quote, based on the fact there is a substantial chance of negotiations that may or may not take place with Iran in the near future, I will make my decision whether or not to go within the next 2 weeks. And then they bombed. So if I had to guess whether or not this statement from Trump was a, you know, sincere acknowledgement that maybe we aren't going to bomb Iran, I don't think we can rely on that. I think actually that's Trump's strategy is to claim that he's backing off, claim that we're not going to go in just before going in. It's obviously a good strategic move overall. Typically, you're going to want to not, you know, say to your enemies that you're going to attack. But then again, every major attack in the Middle East that Trump's done so far has been in coordination with the people that we're attacking. So that does happen. Well, I don't know what just happened to the calls. I don't know if you just called in and got hung up on. I think they cleared the list somehow. The number to dial, 1-877-789-2539, 1-877-789-2539. Again, we'll keep an eye on what's going on in the Middle East. And, you know, it would just be nice if they would give us a better reason than, you know, the color revolution that Mossad sparked isn't going well. It's like, okay, so we're going to go to war. We're going to start World War III over this. By the way, Russia has come out and said any attack by America on Iran would be met with force by Russia. So, I mean, it's not a speculation. It would be World War III if we go in with Iran. And I want to remind you, the only reason it could possibly be is so that Israel has freedom of action in the Middle East. So that's all. That's it. Okay. Before we move on totally, let's go to clip number 26 here. This, I think, is just another important thing. Because, I mean, again, I could spend all day every day talking about nothing but Israel. A lot of people do, and there's plenty of material there, and really there's more provided every single day. I mean, every day I could be reporting on what they're bombing, who they're killing. I could be showing you videos of little kids with their arms blown off. We don't really do that very much. But I feel like every once in a while it is nice to remind everybody, you know, who we're talking about here. Israel, what they do, what they get up to, how they have been far and away. Nobody even comes close to the amount of evil that Israel spills forth on a continual basis. And again, it's just sort of insulting when it's like, we have to rescue the people of Iran. Like, what? No, you've been obliterating innocent people for the last 2 years, but now you expect us to believe that you genuinely and sincerely are concerned about the human rights of Iranians? Like, just stop. Just shut up. Don't insult our intelligence on top of everything, okay? So let's just take a look at what Israel's up to. Clip 26 here.
An Israeli reservist who served in Gaza's told Sky News IDF troops killed Palestinian civilians at random with orders to shoot, sometimes dependent on the mood of the commander. The IDF strongly denies the claim, saying it operates against military targets, not civilians. Our international correspondent, Alex Rossi, has the story for us.
I think everything in a war is kind of messes you up.
It is rare to hear Israeli soldiers speak openly about their time in Gaza. But after three tours of duty, this reservist says his conscience won't let him stay silent.
Every commander can choose for himself what he does, so it's kind of like Wild West. And so some commanders can really decide to do war crimes and do bad things and like don't have very consequences of that.
He agreed to talk on condition of anonymity, fearing he could be labeled a traitor or ostracized at home. These photos were taken while he was serving in Gaza, where he was stationed in the homes of displaced Palestinians.
I think you can't be in this scenario for so long and not, like, normalize it and not, you lose your mind and then killing is more and more normalized and you can't see the problem in it. Kind of feel like I took part of something bad and so I think it's like I need to counter it with something good that I do. And I hope that by speaking of it, it can change like how things are being done. And I think a lot of people, if they knew exactly what's happening, they wouldn't. It wouldn't go down very good for them, and they won't agree with it.
Alex Rossi, Sky News, Jerusalem.
Well, good for him. Yeah, good for him. Wish more people would come out about this. You know, it reminds me of the story that we covered a few weeks ago of the IDF sniper that's living in Chicago now, our fellow American, and he was tricked into thinking he was talking to somebody from the IDF. And so he was just like totally honest. And he's talking about like, yeah, you know, I shot a kid and then his brother came out to try to help him and I shot the brother too. And then the dad came out. So I shot the dad and I'm like, what are you doing? Like, why do you keep like, what's the big deal with a dead body? Why are you trying to go get it? Guess I'll shoot him. And it's just like, yeah, these people are psychopaths, man. Like genuinely, you are breeding psychopaths. You are forcing people into a psychopathic mentality and then, letting them live in Chicago. So that's kind of freaky, isn't it? People who just without remorse, like you can't even understand why like a little kid might run to his brother who was just shot. He like can't comprehend that. He's like, why would he come out to run to his brother? Anyway, I shot him in the head. So, okay, cool, dude. So, I mean, I guess those are your options. You either just embrace it and are just like, oh yeah, I'm a murderous psychopath who's cut off from humanity, or you have a change of conscience like that guy we just heard from. So good for him. With that, we got to your calls. Jefferson in Virginia asks, where is Andrew Bailey? You tell me, Jefferson.
Hey, Harrison. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, sure. I've been asking this question for at least 3 or 4 months now. It's just amazing to me that, you know, Dan Bongino was leaving. We knew that for quite some time. And Andrew Bailey's been there for like 6 months. And nobody's seen him. Nobody's heard a word from him. There's no press conference when Dan Bongino steps down and leaves. And his replacement is like somewhere in behind the scenes doing something. But I would hope he's up to, I don't know, sealed indictments or something. I just don't understand, unless it's some good thing that we don't know about, that Andrew Bailey's up to, you know, doing the Q thing in the background. And all this is going to be revealed eventually. But, you know, Pam Bondi is so bad at her job right now. It's just amazing to me that Trump doesn't just put in like a team of people that will be the acting attorney generals in the future. You know, you can only put in an acting attorney general for like 180 days or something maximum. So they have a limited lifespan or shelf life as the acting attorney general. But you could put the team in now, letting everybody at the Department of Justice know these are going to be your acting attorney general replacements since we can't get them through the Senate. But they will be the people who will be in charge of the DOJ for the next 3 years.
That's a good question. I mean, you know, why doesn't he just fire Pam Bondi, you know, first off? Like, it's a great question. I don't know. Yeah, so I'd forgotten, but basically, usually the deputy director of the FBI is somebody within the FBI who has, like, institutional knowledge and knows how things work. They obviously brought in Dan, and he had experience as Secret Service, but he didn't have any experience in the FBI. And so then they put Bailey in as his co-deputy director, and he was supposed to sort of help Dan Bongino, you know, guide his way through the intricacies of the FBI bureaucracy. So he's still there, and he was appointed like a few months into Dan Bongino's term, or maybe a few weeks, to be his co-deputy. So he's still there and Dan Bongino's left. So yeah, I don't know. I haven't heard much from him. I mean, what do you think, Jefferson? I keep hearing rumors that things are happening. I mean, we know that there's a apparently large grand jury in Florida that's just been impaneled that apparently is going after basically everybody in the Russiagate operation. I've got another video from somebody who, you know, claims to have inside knowledge, and he is convinced that it's not just going to be Clapper and Brennan and everybody. It's going to go all the way up to Obama. Let's go to clip number 4 here, and then Jefferson, stay on the line. I want to get your comments on the other side. Clip number 4, I don't know how accurate this is, but some people who claim to be in the know are saying that it's all happening behind the scenes. Let's watch.
Oh, and one more thing. As I'm walking, okay? Obama's about to go to jail. I'm just going to say that right now. All that deep state foolishness, all that gloating, and now they found all the evidence that they needed to put that mother away and a few other people for the rest of their lives. A lot of y'all, listen, Obama should have never fucked Trump back in 2011. at that White House correspondence dinner. Obama really thought he was hot shit. And here he decided to go fuck with that man for no reason. No reason at all. A lot of y'all gonna have a stroke when that man is perp walked on national television. It's gonna happen real soon. Might happen for Black History Month. But I'm telling y'all right now, Barack Obama is going to jail. James Clapper is going to jail. John Brennan is going to jail. James Comey, they're all going down. And y'all gonna be upset. Some of y'all are gonna crash the fuck out very, very soon. And I'm gonna be here for all of it.
So that is Isaiah L. Carter from Apostate Radio. I don't know what inside information he may have, but he seems pretty confident. And I mean, we do know that Tulsi Gabbard came out with, you know, bombshell proof early on in Trump's administration, going, we got the whole network, how exactly it happened, all the way up to Obama. I mean, they came out with that and wanted the DOJ on it. We haven't seen anything about it yet. Have they been working behind the scenes? I haven't seen evidence of that, but it's sort of necessary. Like, if they want to continue to be in charge, that's what they have to do. Jefferson, what's your take on that?
Well, as the only white man I know of that ever told Barack Obama to his face, you ought to go to jail, and got away with it.
Right.
I hope Isaiah's right, if that's his name or whatever his handle is. But it is amazing that there's so much silence here about what is or isn't happening. You know, we have all kinds of people on X and social media that come out and say, oh, this is going to happen. This is going to go down in sort of a Q-tard kind of way. And maybe it is going to happen. I just don't know what they're waiting for, you know, what the tripwire has to be tripped for the bear trap to go off. But everybody's acting like there's something about to go down. But, you know, Kyle Serafin was saying nobody with institutional knowledge at the FBI wants to step up to the deputy director position because there's some sort of probationary period where you could get yourself in trouble and would hurt your career if things go sideways or badly. I forgot what Serafin was saying about people not wanting to be in the deputy director position that have institutional knowledge, because they'd be ratting out the rest of the organization, you know, if they were going along with Trump's agenda. So there's some downside for people with institution knowledge to step up and take the post. So, you know, Andrew Bailey, I hope he's up to some good behind-the-scenes action, and we see it soon.
We're running out of time. We're running out of time, sir. Thank you so much, as always, for the call, Jefferson. Fantastic stuff. Let's go to Vregan in Wisconsin. Am I reading that right? Vregan? Or is it Reagan?
Yeah, it's Bregan.
Bregan,
it's
okay.
A very old Irish Gaelic name.
Cool.
And I'm the guy who has shop teacher glasses like you. And yours are better, actually, my sweetie said. And thank you for procreating, and congratulations. And I wanted to thank the crew, because you can look at any Patriot website or online Rumble, whatever, live, and no one can pull up video as fast as your crew does.
We got the best crew in the business.
It basically. And so I wanted to also thank Rob Dew for giving me the opportunity to ask him about his thoughts going over the past 20 years. The other day, and also please thank Alex for letting me get to know Russell Means, Charlotte Isabeat, and G. Edward Griffin. Yeah. And
we stand on the shoulders of giants. Absolutely. Thanks for the call, Vregan. Is there any comments you have about any of the topics on today's show?
Yeah, well, basically, I want to see what you think. Everyone talks about the year-end wrap-up, you know, Fox News, whatever, the channel. Yeah, we already know that. Yeah, we lived through it. Yeah, we saw it. But what do you see coming up in the next 3 to 6 months? Because I heard silver was hitting $93 an ounce today. and Zero Hedge or someone was saying 350 in a couple months, or whatever you see in your crystal ball.
I think it very much depends on whether or not Trump is going to take Susie Wiles up on her demand to go hit the road and start campaigning, because obviously this is a midterm election year, and that's going to probably dominate the news cycle for the next little while. Remember, we know that the ultimate plan of the communist left is to stage a giant nationwide strike and shut down the economy and make demands in 2028. And I think most of their planning is building up to that date. I think they're still going to try the Podesta plan nonsense. They're going to, you know, try to continue to aggravate ICE and get more martyrs for their cause to try to I think we're going to see a repeat. I think 2026 is going to be a hell of a lot like 2025, if I had to guess. I think we're going to see a lot of the same stuff over and over, up to and including an attack on Iran and all the fallout from that. I mean, it's exhausting, but we're in a cyclical motion at this moment that I see sort of repeating itself over and over until something drastic changes. Let's go now to Hammer Hardy in Florida. Go ahead, Hammer Hardy. You're on the air.
Harrison, thanks for taking my call. I feel very similarly about the whole Israel situation. I don't have anything against Israel, but when I hear people say things like Israel doesn't need America, America needs Israel, I'm highly offended by that. And so it's for me, it's very easy to go online and find a list of companies that are involved with Israel that we could just boycott. And I know that in Florida they passed a law that punishes companies that engage in any kind of boycott against Israel. But I don't really care. I kind of like a fight, so I kind of like to stir up trouble. And, you know, if somebody's going to insult me to my face, I can insult them right back. And so if people go to boycott-israel.org, there's a whole list of companies involved with Israel at different levels. It's got different ratings, like how much of an impact you'll have if you boycott this company, from high to medium to low. So if people want to, resist at a economic level, that's a very, very easy way to go about it.
It is. And I completely agree. And by the way, one of the documentaries that I always encourage people to watch is called The Lobby from Al Jazeera. And there's a couple versions of it. The one in the USA, it was made, I think, around 2012, around that time. But the whole thing is focused on the attempts by the ADL and other Jewish groups to shut down the BDS movement. Because while you might think boycotts aren't that effective, according to the, you know, Israeli lobbying network, they saw BDS as an existential crisis and moved heaven and earth to try to shut it down. And like, were really intensely trying to stop the movement of BDS, boycott, divest, sanction movement against Israel. So if you listen to the Israelis, they really don't want you boycotting things. So I think that's exactly what you should be doing. And the laws in places like Florida and Texas are really about institutional investment. It's not really laws against personal boycotts. So again, I would say that's what you should be aiming for, basically. If you can get your company to divest, or if you're in a school, like in Al Jazeera in the lobby documentary that we're seeing some of now, it was all about the universities. These students were going to their universities and saying, we don't want our university money going to investments into weapons manufacturers or other Israeli companies. So that would be a great place to start if you're a student. Getting your college to divest from Israel would be a major blow to them. They don't want you doing that.
We're gonna make it, men!
Now look here. Even to this very day, I still have my trusty old trench knife from the war.
Order now at thealexjonesstore.com.
Hello, friends. Welcome to my home. We have all kinds of supplements. Some
sometimes we have BOGO stuffs. We're always coming out with new products, and this is one of my favorites. You can shop for all of our supplements and apparel right here on the phone app.
They looked at sleep deprivation with creatine supplementation. And so they randomized people to either drink a placebo drink or drink 20 grams of creatine through the night. And they kept them awake all night, and they had them do brain puzzle quizzes. And when the subjects were getting the 20 grams of creatine, they did way better on the brain puzzles, but they also complained about being tired a lot less. And so the conclusion is creatine is somehow acutely preventing your brain from suffering during sleep deprivation. And the rationale there is, you know, mitochondria are the powerhouse of the cell, or the power plant that's producing the energy. Creatine is like the power grid, and it distributes that energy throughout the cell. And so if the purpose of sleep is to restore the energy that you used up, but then you intervene by putting creatine in there, now you can keep that energy going, and you can go more hours before you need to get rest and restore that energy because you've increased your capacity to distribute it.
That makes sense. Used to be people only thought of creatine as being a muscle thing. To help you recover. But then over the last year or two, I started hearing talking about cognitive function.
There is some literature on traumatic brain injury where 20 grams of creatine for 6 months doubles the rate of healing.
Whoa. That's incredible.
But it's, yeah, just creatine, I called it more than a performance enhancer, because if you just look at where it's distributed in the body, almost every cell and every tissue has the creatine system. And if you look at the literature, they'll say, well, it's more important in certain cells. Like, it's really important in your muscles because your muscles have this very polarized, sometimes they're at rest, sometimes their energy demand is going through the roof. And it's really important in, like long cells. So for example, your retina is part of your central nervous system, and it's a really long cell that's coming from the brain into the eye, and creatine helps move energy back and forth. But if you just look at where, instead of where is it most important, you just like, where is it? It's like almost every cell in your body has creatine, and it's helping distribute the energy that the mitochondria make throughout your whole body, and that includes pumping stomach acid, it includes sperm swimming up the vaginal canal. And so if you just look at where it is, you would think that creatine would help a lot more than muscles. And I think creatine is really important because it's not in the mitochondria so much as it carries forth the mitochondrial energy of the rest of the cell. That also feeds back in the repair functions for the mitochondria. And so I think creatine, optimizing your creatine status is super important. And I think that everyone who's not eating 1 or 2 pounds of meat per day should probably be taking creatine.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
Keep your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone. Your hand on your gun. Don't you trust anyone.
All right, welcome back, folks.
First in my scope is BAE Systems.
I got a few videos I want to play before we go out to your calls. I want to start with clip 20 here. This is just a little reminder about what's going on in Australia as it continues to lead the world in dystopian and Orwellian crime think laws. It's interesting that everybody sort of gets that it's all predicated on a lie. Everybody sort of knows that if they actually wanted to respond effectively to the attack at Bondi Beach, they'd be doing a hell of a lot different things than what they're doing now. Let's go to clip 20. This is an Australian explaining what this whole bill of combating hate and anti-Semitism is just obviously really about. Let's watch.
Fellow Australians. Well, the proposed Combating Hate Bill is a trap. It's broad, vague, with unintended consequences, although it could be argued that they are actually intentional. There is no mention of Islam specifically, even though the Bondi Muslim attack is the reason they are relying on to introduce this bill. This bill is going to be weaponized against Australians who defend Western values, who acknowledge and celebrate our British colonial history rather than condemning and shaming it, and any organization that fights for sort of Australian values. To lose the ability to openly criticize multiculturalism and certain race, religions and cultures that clash with our way of life, that are extremely sensitive to criticism, even when it's warranted. If we think that the 12,000 arrests in the UK annually for wrongthink are going to be bad, well, if your words cause someone to feel fear or intimidation, you could face years in prison. Racial superiority component of this bill is one of the most insidious and dangerous elements. On the surface, it sounds reasonable, but the way it's drafted is vague, so enforcement is going to be selective and weaponized, and we all know who is going to be targeted. I would say that those who claim that Western or European-derived civilization is superior in governance, women's rights, science, individual freedoms, or quality of life could be regarded as racial superiority. Or stating that Anglo-Australian or European-British heritage that built a successful nation worth of preserving and being proud of could also be twisted into racial superiority rhetoric. Criticising the imported cultures and religions that treat women as inferior, suppress free speech or seek demographic dominance could be reframed as racial superiority. Those groups declaring their own superiority will escape scrutiny under the same laws because the system will protect the vulnerable and the minority narratives while ignoring the majority and the dominant culture. This isn't about stopping genuine racism, genuine Islamic terrorism. It's about silencing defence of Western values and enforcing a false equivalence where all cultures are deemed equal. People from cultures come here, they denigrate Australia, England, the West as racist, colonial, oppressive, demand to live here, demand to benefit from our systems, then lecture us on our supposed inferiority, yet calling that out will now risk us being branded the superiority offender. So this isn't protection. It's a tool to erase pride in our own country, culture, history, while allowing others to assert their own unchallenged. Australia was built by British Europeans over a 200-year period into the best nation on earth. Being proud of that is not supremacy, it is truth. But under these laws, that truth becomes hate. So I think all these discrimination, vilification, hate speech laws all need to be repealed. Otherwise, our civilization is going to be dismantled from within. Australia first, Australia always.
Well, you have to go to jail now, ma'am. Sorry. No pointing out how ridiculous our laws are. That's against the law. It's kind of one of those self-fulfilling things, huh? If you can make it illegal to argue against the law, it's pretty convenient, actually. Just mind-blowing stuff. We got some good news here, just breaking. Israeli and Arab officials have privately suggested the U.S. hold off on Iran strikes. Israeli officials have suggested the Trump administration delay large-scale strikes until the Iranian regime is even more strained, while one Arab official said there's a lack of enthusiasm from the neighborhood for American military action in Iran right now. Israeli and Arab officials have told the Trump administration in recent days that they believe the Iranian regime may not yet be weakened to the point where U.S. military strikes would be the decisive blow that topples it. According to U.S. official, a former U.S. official briefed on the discussions, a person familiar with the Israeli leadership thinking, and two Arab officials. So it seems like getting cold feet a little bit, which is very good to see. All options are at President Trump's disposal to address the situation in Iran. The president listens to a host of opinions on any given issue, but ultimately makes the decision he feels is best. So I'd seen other people saying Israel says that they are happy for the U.S. to do it, but they're opting out of any action in Iran right now. Yeah, you guys go do it. No, we fully support you guys doing it. We're just not going to be involved. Oh, okay. Great. So that's good news. We'll see if it bears out, but that's the latest rumors of wars. Let's go out to your calls now. We've got Sherry in Wisconsin. Thanks for calling in. Sherry, you're on the air.
Hi, Harrison.
Howdy.
I want to, when you said earlier, you got something to say about the Jews, Colin? So
let them have it. It's still legal here. It's still legal here. Embrace your freedom. What do you think about the Jews,
I'm
Sherry?
I'm telling you. And when I And when I'm on X, I do it so much, and I'm like grateful I can. Anyways, I want to shine a different light, a little different perspective. Someone had brought this to my attention. I dug into it a little, not a lot, and I want to dig into it more. So quick background, you know, they went into Babylonian captivity. They were so pissed off that they started a cult with Talmud as proof of their rebellion. They were only supposed to go in for 70 years. Quite obviously, they didn't get the land back till they conned it in 48. So here, fast forward to Rome. Paul Saul showed up on the scene years after Jesus died. Does anybody realize that he, as a Talmudic Jew, who, from what I understand, sat on the Sanhedrin, the Supreme Court of Israel, which judged according to the Talmud, and you and I both know the Talmud teaches you can deceive the goy. And in his writing, he refers to what he teaches as, quote unquote, my gospel. He was always at odds with Peter because the ceremonial laws are gone, temple's gone. So all we're left is with beautiful civil laws. Did anybody ever think for a second that the law is beautiful, just as King David constantly referred to it, and that we are all being deceived in the utmost ridiculous manner by Paul?
I mean, this has been a conversation that's gone on for a while. I know a lot of people like to say that, Paul weaponized. I mean, this has all been gone over by the church fathers. You know, the Talmud wasn't written until the 400 or 500. So Paul was not Talmudic. He was a Jew in one of the factions of Judea there. But he wasn't Talmudic because the Talmud didn't come about until about 400 A.D. So that would have been before this. I've heard that. I just think you should read the Christian teachers on this. I mean, they accepted Paul's revelation and conversion as legitimate. And, you know, saying my gospel, I think gospel, doesn't it just mean the good news or the truth, right? So he's saying my good news, my truth. That's just an anti-Christian sort of slur. It's basically people who start looking at the Jews and become anti-Semitic, sometimes go so far as to say that Christianity is a giant Jewish trick, which it's like, if that was true, then we should be worshiping the Jews. If the Jews have pulled off a 2,000-year con, if they had the foresight and the ability to plant prophecies thousands of years in the future that would be fulfilled perfectly, it doesn't make any sense. It's God. God did it this way. God set everything up like this. And the Jews were the egg to deliver Jesus. They were the, you know, carrying vessel of revelation. But that was delivered with Jesus. And now everybody who accepts Jesus is the chosen, not the Jews. So, I would look into some Christian responses to these types of claims, Sherry, because they've been made forever. And a lot of the early church fathers addressed all of these concerns, you know, in ways that are very convincing. So I wouldn't worry too much about any of that. Personally, I wouldn't look into it. I mean, I'm not saying not to investigate it. You certainly should, but just make sure you're getting both sides, because when you do that, I think one side is clearly comes out on top. Thank you so much for the call, Sherry. Let's go to Climb BMX in Canada. Climb BMX, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Good, hey, thanks.
Dr. Berman there said polarizing. And what could be more polarizing than anti-Semitism versus Islamophobia? It you're on one side or the other,
right? Well, that is certainly the. I mean, there's a lot of dividing and conquering going on right now, and this is something I've been trying to talk about on X for a while. Like, the best example is, Candace Owens is doing this thing. Now, she's the champion against Israel. Now, ignore the fact that she was literally working for Israel 2 years ago. Now, she's the champion. Now, she's the queen. She's the one in charge. You know, she's the one fighting Israel, even though she thought they were good until like 2 years ago. don't listen to us. Don't listen to people like me who's been talking about Israel the entire time I've been at InfoWars for the last 8 years. No, it's, you know, Candace Owens, she's the queen. But Alex criticizes her because she's running with nonsense, because she's purporting things as facts that are absolutely untrue, or at least baseless accusations. And then Laura Loomer comes in and goes, yeah, I did that. Yeah, that was me. Thanks, Alex. Thanks for doing what I said and going after Candace Owens. Thanks for letting me know, let everybody know you're on my team. And it's like, do you really think Laura Loomer got Alex to do that? Do you think she has any say over him at all? No, it was an attempt, because they know that Candace Owens people, or the whatever that, you know, end of the spectrum is suspicious of Alex, because Alex doesn't hate Jews, doesn't hate Israel, hasn't made that a central pillar of his identity. And so by Loomer claiming to be in cahoots with Alex, she was trying to drive a wedge, because she knows that her enemies are the Candace Owens people, and she doesn't want Alex Jones being allied with them. It's a divide and conquer tactic, obviously. And we see this over and over and over again. And we even see, I mean, Donald Trump's doing it. And I mean, this is a like established strategy that they're pursuing, is going, if you're a Republican, you have to be on the side of Israel. And if you're not on the side of Israel, you're not really a Republican. We'll kick you out. This is all just dividing and conquering. So, yeah, there's, the polarizing aspect is a key component of why all of this is going on. Absolutely. And the idea that it's between Judaism and Islam is ridiculous. It's not an either or. This is a game of rock, paper, scissors. Okay. We have two enemies. It's fine. And they have two enemies. It's fine. So what do you think about that, Klein?
With that, I've got the Alex Jones signed copy of The Great Reset, and I stockpiled X2. Okay. And, like phobias, this may be for Dr. Pechenik, but phobias, I've called in about this before, phobias keep you from living your life. If you have cynophobia, you think there's dogs in your fridge and you don't eat. If you have acrophobia, you can't walk down the stairs and you don't go to work. So anti-Semitism is just like Islamophobia. Oh, I think there's jihadis outside my door, so I don't live my life.
Let me explain how I think the word phobia is being used, because the same thing with homophobia, right? Typically, you're scared of something you don't know, right? So what it's saying is that you're uneducated. So it's setting up the paradigm that either you're in favor of this thing, you love Islam, or you love homosexuality, or you're scared of it, but you're not really scared of it because you don't know about it. So it's basically saying you're either with us or you're ignorant. Is actually what they mean when they say phobia. You're homophobic. What they're saying is you must be stupid. You must be uninformed. You just don't understand. So you're scared of the thing you don't understand. And if you understood it, then you would be in favor of it. It precludes the option of understanding something and still not liking it and not being in favor of it. By framing it as, if you understood it, then you'd be in favor of it. Because you're against it, you must not understand it. Therefore, any opposition to us must be born out of fear and ignorance, not legitimate concerns, legitimate objections. So that's why the term phobia is used, is to frame it as you're either intelligent, enlightened, informed, and therefore love Islam and multiculturalism and homosexuality, or you're an ignorant rube who's scared of the dark, and so you're you know, just too stupid to understand why these things are so great. So I think that's why the term phobia is used. But these are made up terms that don't really mean anything. They just mean shut up, right?
Phobias keep you from living your life. You don't go outside your door because you have a phobia of something. Stairs, dogs, whatever it is.
Yeah. No, I got you. It's just, you know, it's a made up word. It's a made up word. Who would be scared of that? Who's scared of a little husky in the fridge? That'd be so much fun. Thank you for the call, Klein BMX. Very good points. Let's go to Jacob in Oregon. Jacob, you're on the air.
All right. How's it going today?
Good, thank you.
All right. Well, I'm going to start off with the InfoWars, that nitric boost, man. That stuff is awesome. I'm 39 years old, and I run circles around these 20-year-old kids all day in that labor, any weather, any time.
Heck yeah.
You know, and so the supplements on the Alex Jones store are equally good, but I've been having trouble with the shipping and stuff lately, so I've kind of ebbed off on my purchases there. You know, I'm usually about $1,000 a year supplement guy, and you know, it'd be awesome to see them, you know, pick up slack on that, you know.
Well, that's a bummer. I don't like hearing that. We'll We'll have to talk to the guys at Big League. They're usually pretty pretty efficient on this sort of stuff. So I am sorry to hear that. But go ahead.
A couple orders, they've been kind of messed up. But you know, I was hearing earlier, you know, you played that video of the guy saying that Obama is going to be arrested and everything like that. And that just brings me right back to, you know, damn, I'm going to believe it when I see it. You know, a lot of people seem pretty confident that, you know, Hillary was going to go to Gitmo and all this other stuff. And, you know, it's just, you know, I believe it when I see it. Yeah. Really. Really.
That's where I'm at, too. Yeah. And I, you know, it's the same thing yesterday. It happened again today where, like, there's a bunch of clips of Trump saying stuff, but, like, you know, who cares? Like, I don't know. He's talking big game again, but you know, until we see something, I really don't care what the statements are that are made. Like, I don't care about the banging on the podium and calling Ilhan Omar bad names. It's like, all right, but she's still here. She's still a congresswoman. She's still acting arrogant and mouthing off. Like, so either deport her, denaturalize her, get rid of her, and then we'll all celebrate together, or just like stop talking about it. Oh, I'm right there with you, Jacob.
Right. And then you have the people that, you know, it's like, oh, okay, so we're not going to bomb Iran tonight. It had nothing to do with the outcry of people in the United States. It had to come from the top down, right?
Right.
I mean, you know, it's the Jews. I mean, I had to say it. You know, you wanted me to. But, you know, my real question is, what do they do with all the foreskins?
Well, they send them to Korea where they're made into face cream, if you want to know the truth.
Is that what the fried calamari is when you order it?
Oh, stop.
That little appetizer.
Stop. You're not ruining calamari for me, sir. I'm not going to let you ruin calamari for me. No, they literally send the foreskins to makeup companies, and it's made into face cream. So that's the actual answer. As creepy as it is, that's the truth. I want to know. I would like to know if there's been a decline in people being circumcised, because I feel like boomers just sort of did it without thinking about it. But like, nobody I know circumcised their son. Everybody's just like, what? Why would I do that? Like, no, I'm not doing that. Boomers just sort of did it and didn't really think about it, I guess. But like, I don't know. I don't think people nowadays are just sort of doing that. I wonder if it's gone down statistically. Cause that seems like one of those things that's like, why are we doing this again? I'm sorry. What is the point of this? It seems like it's horrible. It seems like it horribly traumatizes babies, and there's absolutely no reason to do it other than being marked as a slave. Thank you for the call, Jacob. Let's go to Alex in Virginia now. I want to talk about the Black Hebrew Israelites, the real Jews. Thanks for calling in, Alex.
Hey, evening, Harrison. You know, we're just quit jigging around.
Yes, sir.
And, you know, since you're going hardcore on those Jews over there, the Canaanites, well, let's just, I'm going to take you a trip back to 1998 when I was involved with the Black Hebrew Israelites in New York. There was one show that came on, and it predates you. It's called Jack Van Impe Ministries.
Okay.
This guy was on point when it comes down to the Bible. He labeled the number one most watched FBI group. It was the Black Hebrew Israelites. So when I went back to the school and I let them know this, they stood up and they clapped and they was like, yeah, you see, we're the most watched on the FBI watch list. And I come back around. Yeah, it's a badge of honor. Yeah, we're watched. But then they're severely protected because as hardcore as these guys curse and scream and yell at people, demean them, and all this, that, and the third, they've never been challenged. So in my personal opinion, they're part of the PSYOP because the Jews have never, ever challenged these guys. They just let them go, and they rant.
That's it. I mean, do you think it's because they're Black? Do you think it's because, you know, it's a minority group, so they get leeway that white groups wouldn't get?
Well, there's that the whole religion thing, and I guess it's protected under a religion. But nevertheless, these guys are the most racist, anti-Semitic people on the planet, as far as I'm concerned, and they don't get harmed at all. Not one word, a slap on the wrist. Not nothing, Harrison.
Yeah, That is weird, because no, it's for real. You listen to some of the Black Hebrew Israelites, and they're on a street corner with a bullhorn saying stuff that I wouldn't even say on X. I mean, they go really, really hard. So yeah, it is. It's bizarre that they don't have more pressure against them. I don't know. Is that, why do you think that is?
They're part of the psyop.
Yeah.
They're part of the whole conditioning thing. They're in. They're part of the deal. They're the NPCs. They're out there. They're part of just the whole setup.
You know, maybe it's to provide an alternative to like becoming Muslim, because so many, like, you know, Black Power people in, you know, in the 90s and stuff were taking on the Malcolm X kind of Nation of Islam style, and maybe there was like, all right, we don't want them doing that. Let's give them something else that's kind of, you know, similar vibe a little bit. I don't know if they even are a similar vibe, but, you know, maybe it was an attempt to stop Black activists from going over to the Nation of Islam. What do you think about that?
It does preach division, and so as long as it preaches division, they don't mind it. They'll let it keep going.
Keep dividing.
Keep speaking hate. No big deal.
Yep.
They let it happen. Meanwhile, I can go online and say something silly like they have big noses, and I'll have them coming for me from the UK.
Yeah. Well, maybe we should all join the Black Israel, Hebrew Israelites. Maybe that's the solution. Maybe we all need to join them, and we'll all be cloaked in whatever protection they have. Maybe we all need to become Jewish. Maybe that's the answer. Maybe we can all get in on this train. Thank you, as always, for the call, Alex. I do want to go to one more. We got about 2 minutes left in the show. Let's go to, Josh in Colorado. Josh in Colorado, you got a minute. Go ahead.
Yeah, I had a comment in regards to the Australia clip that you played earlier.
Yeah.
What's more supremacist than calling yourself a chosen person? Like, to me, that's the ultimate form of supremacy, and that's why.
Isn't that ironic?
I think there's so many issues.
Isn't that ironic?
And on the Iran front, My grandpa had a car, and it always had this bumper sticker, and it started to make more sense to me the older I got. But it said, the first casualty of war is the truth.
Yeah.
And I think that's kind of right where we're at right now. And I know I'm all over the map, but on the Epstein files, we don't want the release of the Epstein files. We actually want some justice you know, how we're being manipulated with the Epstein files. And I just don't see how the United States can have a moral outcome by using these immoral tactics and being, you know, manipulated on that.
100%. I completely agree. And hey, truth is treason in the empire of lies. And truth is the first casualty of war. It always is. Folks, we'll keep fighting with truth as our weapon as long as you support us at thealexjonesstore.com. Thealexjonesstore.com. Go there today. Site-wide, 40% off. That sale ends tonight. Go to thealexjonesstore.com. Get yourself a trench knife or one of the supplements. Everything on the site is 40% off. Massive sale. Gonna end tonight. Don't wait. Thealexjonesstore.com/Harrison. We'll see you tomorrow.
They've sold out to it. They're blind to their cowards. You don't want to be part of them. Like Patrick Henry says, forget you are our brethren. Go from us in peace. Crouch down and lick the hand that feeds you. Let your chains sit lightly upon you. As for me, give me liberty or give me death.
The truth is out there, and they don't want you to know it. There's still people that don't want to believe me out there. How are you going to tell me that Frog isn't totally gay?
Well, damn, I guess Alex was right. That frog was super gay.